show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Mercifully, we have made it to the end of the week. It is the 19th day of April 2013. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home where you can push the button that says listen live and, well, do exactly what many of you are probably doing exactly right now. But, you know, tell your friends, wake the cat, whatever. The Horn is also available on a wide variety of streaming platforms, places like TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Radio. Apps for your smartphones, dar.fm, streama.com, Roku devices. Podcasts are available on iTunes. Podcasting address is located at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Feels like it's been a while getting to this Friday, doesn't it? Are you exhausted? I think I have, and I mean no disrespect or lack of sympathy by this. I have horror and disaster fatigue. Truly. I guess some would say that I was wrong in saying that it was a couple of white guys. Okay, so they weren't Ron Paul followers that we know of. I'm prepared to say I was wrong. But I'm also not prepared to jump on the Al-Qaeda done come to get us again. Islamic Jihad Union gonna get your Bible. No. No, this looks like a murder right now, or a series of murders. And since the big brother got sent off to his long home, I would guess he was the leader. And we're not going to know much about what he thought unless he left a manifesto laying around or something like that. I think the fatigue is kicking in. For other people too. Note here from Jim saying, no levity intended. I have heard everything on all channels as far as a reason for this attack except blame it on the Bossa Nova. It is madness. And it is, Jim, it is. Good evening, Don. Don's in West Tennessee. He said, I'm in the... he's not in the... Oh, bless your heart. He says, I'm in the Shoals for the weekend. Well, hot dog. Enjoy yourself. What's the name of that place to get the slaw dog? Well, that is Dick Howell's Pit Barbecue on the corner of Pine Street and Sherrod Avenue in North Florence. Nothing like it. If you should happen to be hungry for the best hamburger in the world, perhaps tomorrow or the next day or whatever, you go down into East Florence on Old Jackson Highway, I think it is. Go down into East Florence to Staggs' Grocery. Awesome hamburger. Roasted oysters at Cajun's across the bridge in Sheffield is pretty special, too. Dick Howell's Pit Barbecue for the Dick Howell's Hot Dog, corner of Sherrod and Pine Street. And enjoy. And that's a welcome little respite. Thank you for the question, Don, because, like I said... disaster and horror fatigue. My heart, and I'm sure all our hearts, go out to the people of Watertown and Boston generally. When's the last time an entire city was shut down? Even in the wake of the Trade Center attacks on September 11, 2001, New York did not completely shut down. Boston is locked down in the search, unless it has been resolved before I got on the air. Well, Lottie in the chat room saying he's been out most of the day. The lockdown's not too bad where he is in Boston. But locked down over a 19-year-old young man. I'm certainly not saying whether that was appropriate. Well, I mean, it is what it is. But it has got to be nerve-wracking, especially for people in the Watertown area. And there are, and I suspect there will remain, more questions than there are answers. You know, it's interesting the way people think. I just got back from running an errand, and Ferg rode with me. And when he heard that the older brother had been shot and that the younger brother jumped in the stolen vehicle and fled, Ferg manifested almost a sense of insult. He left his brother? He said. Dad, that's just wrong. You don't leave. And I explained to him, no, his brother left him, son. Rushing the police, firing. Bought the baby brother another 18 hours of human life on this quite frequently sad planet. Me? Well, you know how I am for background. When I heard the elder brother's first name, I went, well, goddess of irony's on duty. Tamerlane? Really? Tamerlane? Timur? Sheesh. We'll go over that. We'll go over some of the details of that perhaps in a little bit. I've been emailing back and forth with Dr. John trying to get a cultural handle on all of this, and I think we'll probably be talking in a little bit about the region, what has beset it, what its history is. Although, do please remember, when we talk about the 19-year-old, we are not talking about a Chechen. You know how the right-wingers are always saying, I don't agree with calling himself Italian-American, Irish-American. I'm just American. Right? The 19-year-old is an American. He became an American citizen last year. On September 11th, I do believe. Or maybe it was September 11th, 2011, he became an American citizen. I'm not sure. But he's an American citizen. So to that extent, and to the extent that it's terrorism, it is an act of domestic terrorism. But, well, it's been, well, watching the for-profit media has been a sickening little circus. The way they chased down the uncles of the two young men who were living, for God's sakes, in Maryland, not Boston. Sticking microphones in their faces. Shameful. Don't you figure maybe the law enforcement authorities already talked to them? If there was anything to be had? Oh, well. Why bother? Note coming in from Randy. He says, I don't know why the fertilizer plant explosion isn't getting more coverage. Didn't that kill more people? And couldn't that be deemed possibly suspicious? it's not, well, what it is or isn't to me is largely irrelevant, but I would say it is not suspicious to me, Randy. It is par for the course. That's not the only fertilizer plant in Texas. That is one of several. One of which was noted in the last couple of years as being a disaster waiting to happen, only it turned out to be this one. It's not suspicious, but it is damned sure. Well, very nearly criminal, it looks to me, very nearly criminally negligent. The last time this plant was inspected by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, you know, one of them job-killing regulators, was 1985. More than half my life ago. Right? Records reviewed by the Associated Press indicate that OSHA issued the West Chemical and Fertilizer Company, as the plant was called at the time, a $30 fine for a serious violation regarding storage of anhydrous ammonia. Yeah, I think Sandra's got it right. Sandra just tweeted at me. It's corporate terrorism, so not so much. Point taken. $30. Now, we anhydrous ammonia is incredibly toxic, poisonous, deadly. And on the night of the explosion in West, the ammonia smell coming from the plant was said to have been profound. On that day in 1985, a $30 fine was levied for what was termed a serious violation regarding the storage of anhydrous ammonia, doesn't that have to be stored under pressure? Maybe not. Used to give me the creeps because there was an anhydrous ammonia tank sitting at the Goals coal prep plant down in western Raleigh County, right next to Marsh Fork Elementary, and, curiously, literally a stone's throw away from that pile of dirt and rubble that was holding the Shoemate Dam that was holding back 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste. That's what I like to do. I like to store highly explosive chemicals next to my piles of dirt and rubble holding back 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste. So, $30 for a violation that might very well have... Oh, well, I guess it kind of did kill a dozen or so people and wounded God knows how many more, and how many more are still missing in West. Also, back in 1985, OSHA cited the West Chemical and Fertilizer Company for four other serious violations of respiratory protection standards. But remember, this is the Reagan 80s. So no fines were issued. The most they could have been fined was $1,000. But they didn't. Bad for business. Right? At least 160 people have been injured as a result of the massive explosion at the fertilizer plant. They What more is there to say? In 2006, the plant was cited because it didn't get a permit regarding complaints about strong ammonia smells as far back as 2006. Of course, ammonia is a component of ammonium nitrate, the explosive that's also good. It's what plants crave. It's a dessert topping. It's a floor wax. No, it's both. That other incredibly deadly disaster waiting to happen is in Pasadena, Texas, by the way. And Sandra points out all of this is compounded by the fact that the chemical plant had a non-union workforce that was naturally terrified to drop the dime to OSHA that would have generated some surprise inspections. That's how it works, you see. You can complain and be out of a job, or you can keep your mouth shut, play ball, and hope the whole damn thing doesn't blow up on you. And since 2010, with the loss of so many government employment positions, and factoring in as well sequestration, one can only wonder how many OSHA inspectors, how many MSHA coal mine inspectors have been furloughed, laid off, and there weren't very many of them to begin with. Not inspiring. So we have that. It's Friday on the front porch, after all. And of course, we can take this wherever you would like for it to go. An update, by the way, after last night's school board meeting in Kanawha County, West Virginia, there is an outpouring of support for young Caitlin Campbell, future Wellesley College student. Wellesley adding further support to her cause, saying the Wellesley community fosters a living and learning environment where diverse opinions, ideas, and perspectives are not only welcomed, they are encouraged. And of course, that should be the mission of any institution of higher learning. The Wellesley Sisters, a group of alumni have started a petition to applaud the young woman. And meanwhile, the reputation of George Washington High School, one of the best high schools in public high schools in the state of West Virginia, continues to plummet. So it's nice to see that this young woman, who has spoken up in an intensely repressive situation, is being supported instead of excoriated. Good for her. I hope down the road maybe we hear from her. The other side of that story lies in the fact that this young Appalachian woman will go and will get, presumably, a magnificent education, and more likely than not, will come back home just enough to visit her parents and her extended family, and then we'll go back to civilization. And the hillbilly brain drain will continue, thereby consolidating this state's benighted future, concentrating it, pressing it down, and shaking it together. That's not to say that everybody here is a moron. I like to think I'm not. I like to think the kids that Agnes and I have raised and our grandbabies are not and will not be. I work with a number of brilliant friends and colleagues in the ongoing struggle for hillbilly human rights and hillbilly self-determination. But such people are an exception and not a rule. And if you're 18 years old and you're graduating high school and you've got a chance to, in West Virginia, and you've got a chance to go to a place like Wellesley, you go with wings on your heels. And nobody really blames you if you don't come back. Being hill people, we pine for home. And I have no doubt that young Caitlin will pine for home. And she'll come back just long enough to remember why she left. But good for Caitlin Campbell, standing up and being supported for it instead of shunned. And berated, although there has been some of that as well. It's 22 minutes past the hour. I'm willing to bet this might be Dr. John. Is that Dr. John?
Hey, Bob. Yeah, it is.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm so glad you called. You have become my cultural go-to guy for understanding the incomprehensible. And
well,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that's high praise. I don't pretend to comprehend much of what happened today or this week, but I appreciate that.
Well, I don't either, but I think, and you, given your background, understand the value of context. A pot shirt is only a pot shirt, but if it's a pot shirt laying next to something else, then context becomes king, right?
Exactly.
And in this, what is, first of all, let's just start with the geographic location of Chechnya. It's in the Caucasus, right?
Yeah, Chechnya is in the Caucasus, along with the Republic of Georgia, Dagestan, a dozen, mostly Russian federal republics are in that region. And where this is an isthmus, a very large, you know, body of land with water on both sides, the Black Sea to the west and the Caspian Sea to the east. For that reason, like that sort of region always is, it's a major crossroads of people and cultures and languages, and it has been for millennia in one sense, and even longer than that, more than a million years in a sort of a broad human origins kind of sense.
Oh, so folks have been wandering around there for a while?
For a very long while. It is the story of human evolution, you know, begins in East Africa and continued there for a long time until we have Homo erectus around 1.8 million years ago. And Homo erectus walked out of Africa for the first time and colonized most of the old world. And for Homo erectus to get into Eurasia and then to get into Europe, and later human species as well, they had to go right through the Caucasus. It's the only way. You know, you can't jump the water, can't walk across the Mediterranean. So to get from Africa into Europe, into Russia, you have to go right through that same region.
Yeah, there's only one road.
Exactly. It's the only route. And so we have really, actually kind of unusual fossil remains from the Republic of Georgia of Homo erectus. And they're unusual because they are as old as the African specimen. So the theory always was we have Homo erectus arising in East Africa and over the course of a couple hundred thousand years colonizing the old world. These Georgia finds, a place called Damanisi, challenge that because they're basically contemporaneous with the East African specimens.
Oh, so my God. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's fairly new, and they're odd ducks in many ways. But I don't really know necessarily what to make of that, except the Caucasus has been a pathway, a crossroads, an ideal settling spot since before we were technically humans. That's the takeaway.
Wow. And so when we talk about this is a mountainous area, these are hill people, and of course Caucasus is the origin of the word we use to describe generally people with pale skin, Caucasian. Is that anthropologically the home of pale folks? I mean, or is that just something? Is that, you know, George Washington chopping down the cherry tree material?
Well, there's two ways to answer that. One is where are the ancestors of people of European descent ultimately from? And I suspect you know what I'm going to say, which is we are ultimately from Eastern Africa. So in one sense, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and the whole idea of racial typology is a problem. But in the other sense, yes, that is the origin of what we call white folks, because that region is where the term Caucasian came from, and it was applied to people of European descent. The reason for that is that what you
that's
the road or
right yeah. right yeah please
sure the reason that white folks are called Caucasian goes back to really really early anthropology. It's my field, early 19th century, when we first started to attempt to classify and group different groups of humans based on characteristics. There was a German early anthropologist anatomist, his name was Blumenthal, and he is the one who coined the term Caucasian, Blumenbach, Johann Blumenbach. And he applied the term Caucasian to people of European descent because he based it upon a series of cranial measurements that distinguished Europeans from African populations, from Asian populations. In other words, he looked at a bunch of skulls, he took a bunch of measurements, the breadth of the nose, the recedingness of cheekbones, the angle between the forehead and the nose aperture, how much the chin recedes, this whole series of facial, craniofacial measurements on skulls.
So is he the progenitor of Caucasoid versus Mongoloid versus Negroid?
Exactly.
All of that?
That's where I'm going with this. Yeah, okay. Exactly. That's where this comes from. But the point is that it goes early 19th century, anthropology, anatomy, and it's based on cranial measurements. It's not based on skin tone. It's not based on hair texture. It's not based on any other features except cranial measurements.
Not necessarily the best way of trying to, I don't know, taxonomize humanity.
Well, in one sense it is because facial structure for one thing, there is some predictive value to these measurements. In other words, it is possible with a fairly high degree of success to look at skulls from a population that you don't know where it came from, take these measurements, fit them into the tables that have been developed, and say this person's ancestry was probably from Europe versus from China versus from Ethiopia. In that sense, it's good. In another sense, it's a very, very terrible way of trying to say anything of significance, because cranial measurements are the result of adaptations to diet and to environment. They don't say anything about worth, intelligence, aptitude or anything like that.
No, and that was, I guess that was where I was going, John.
Right.
I'm sitting here looking at Chechnya's location on this isthmus between the Caspian and the Black Seas that you described, and I can't help being, at least impressed with the fact that, lo and behold, it is almost due north of Mesopotamia.
Yes.
By some several hundreds of miles, or perhaps thousands. And so that whole cultural flow, once we get past the hominids, is it so mountainous that things just did, people, cultural elements, technologies and so forth didn't cross over? Is there a relationship there between like the old Mesopotamian cultures and this region?
Yeah, there is. I mean, that this region was in a sphere of interaction at different times between the various Mesopotamian states, between the states that were in Turkey and Anatolia, like Çatalhöyük, those kinds of places. But that's the point again of the pathway between Eurasia and Europe and Russia, is that people have been moving through this area for so long. It is an incredibly culturally, ethnically, linguistically diverse place. Dagestan, for instance, next to Chechnya, is the most ethnically diverse of the Russian republics. You know, there are so many people and cultures there, and it always has been because of this intense, enormous history of population flows, north and south and east and west.
So when someone says that they are Chechen, well, or as the for-profit media are doing today, that these two young men were Chechen, what exactly does that mean, or do we know?
Well,
I mean, they've got ethnically Russian names to the point that the first syllable of the word is czar.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, Tsarnaev?
Yes.
That has been shortened by one of the uncles to Tsarny. But that's an ethnically Russian name. But does that necessarily mean that they are, or is there such a thing as ethnically Russian?
There is. The naming probably, because Russian is basically a common language in the Caucasus, because there's so much diversity and variation, right? People speak it because they know it. So a lot of names have been Russianized, if that's the word. I know that his uncle that was interviewed today did say that they were ethnic Chechens. Also, that's how he identified. It speaks to people who speak the same language and have the generally shared sense of values. I mean, that's what any ethnicity is.
Right. Precisely. An ethnicity is not necessarily some sort of genotype.
Right. It's not one at all. It's not a genotype or a phenotype.
Okay. Okay. Jim has a question, Dr. John. He says, going back to what you were talking about with Blumenthal's cranial studies, he said, is there a relationship, or is that the reason that, for instance, the Nazis and the eugenicists lean so much on cranial dimensions?
That's exactly the reason. Yes. Absolutely.
So
I can't elaborate. That's exactly, that is the very reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we know what kind of trouble that gets you into. Well, I find, and this is, of course, a mountainous area, and, well, I have a feeling of kinship with anybody who, but there's, I hate to overgeneralize, but there's something. It seems like if you look around the world, mountain people are frequently put upon.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be the Afghans, with everybody from the Greeks to the Persians, to the Russians to the British, to us, trying to tell them how to live. Well, by Greeks I mean Macedonians, Alexander.
Yeah.
To the Chechens. And I'm told that Grozny, the capital of the capital city of Chechnya, is basically a wasteland now, having been damn near leveled in its entirety by the Russians in around 1996, and as part of that brutal civil war, in which as many as 200,000 Chechens may have been killed by the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
The for-profit media have been aching, John. I don't know if you've noticed this, but it seems to me they've been aching for an Al-Qaeda tie-in.
Yeah.
And almost to the point of you can hear them rooting for it. And it's deeply disturbing because what's the ultimate outcome if they can finally say, oh yeah, you know, he went to a couple of Al Qaeda tent meetings. What does that mean? Does that mean we hot up the threat board and get ready to go and blast the bejesus out of somebody again?
Well, do you know what Chechnya means?
No.
In the language?
No.
Land of minerals. It's very rich in oil and gas and rare earths. And I'm just saying. This is not Alex Jones. I'm just when you said that.
Isn't it terrible that we have to use that caveat?
It is. You know, but you mentioned the most recent civil war. There were massive deportations of people throughout the Caucasus, especially Chechens, into Siberia at several points during the Soviet rule. So this is not the first. You know, this has been going on for quite a while, and the problem that comes up in the Caucasus over and over again is because it is so varied and so diverse, and first the Mongols and then the Turks and then the Soviets attempted to craft basically states out of these diverse group of people, drawing largely arbitrary lines. And that situation, as we've seen so many times before, leads to so much conflict.
Well, I'm just looking at it on Google Earth right now, and that whole region, you know, Dagestan, North Ossetia, Georgia, Chechnya, Stavropol, you don't see a lot of natural or topographic demarcations that say, well, this would be a people and that's a natural border. It does seem to be sort of arbitrarily imposed.
Yeah. I would imagine it was. I don't know how the lines were drawn, but that makes perfect sense for a very culturally, ethnically, linguistically diverse region. You would imagine people would be able to sort of naturally settle into their own hollers, for instance, whatever they call them, their own mountain range, their side of the valley versus the other people's side of the valley. And without state intervention, they would probably be able to get along fairly well in a natural environment like that. I would assume. I have nothing to base that on, but it seems reasonable to me.
But you mentioned the Turks, and you mentioned the Mongols, and the Soviets. Again, because this is such a crossroads, that speaks to the fact that it's changed hands so many times over the ages, doesn't it?
Yes.
And well, let's go back for just a minute, because like I said, the goddess of irony was at work, and I guess it's just because of my liberal arts background that my pink little ears perked up and said, the older brother's name was what?
Mm-hmm.
Tamerlane. Really? I mean, I guess that's like naming the Muslim people's naming their kids Muhammad, or we name people George for George Washington, or
mm-hmm.
you know, Jewish families name little boys Moshe after great heroes. But I just read that and went, well, I will be damned, because Tamerlane is a fascinating character. What, 1336 to 1405, roughly, and was responsible, by some accounts, for the deaths of somewhere around 17 million human beings?
Not just through the sword, but through infection and all those other things that come along with it, sure.
Right. And basically became the great-great-grandfather of the Turkic rule that would control Anatolia and become basically the Ottoman Empire. Have I got it right?
That's my understanding. This is much more in your bailiwick than mine, but that matches my understanding of it. Yeah.
I guess that means that his memory is still very much in the minds of the people there. I mean, you don't just name your kid Tamerlane, do you? I mean, I realize we're speculating, but...
Yeah, I would imagine. I would be curious if, you know, Genghis is a common name in the region. Although, let me ask you, I keep seeing references to people saying that one of the men's family ethnically or farther back in time, was from Kyrgyzstan. Have you heard that at all? Because that, I'm trying to wrap my brain around that.
Well, what I heard said was that they were unable to remain in Chechnya and had emigrated to Kyrgyzstan because both of these two young men had Kyrgyz visas when they came here.
That I really don't understand that, because that's not next door.
No, it is not.
And there's no historical ties between the two until you go back to Tamerlane. Nice segue. But I haven't been able to understand, to wrap my head around, what that connection is. So it's not clear, I guess.
Well, I wonder if it's part of that relocation tendency that you were referencing a few minutes ago.
Oh, maybe so. Maybe it was farther back in time. I think it's, I guess the point I would like to make is that it's not, it is far from clear that they have, that there is a strong Chechen Caucasus connection or influence or relationship to the wars and the events.
Right. I don't think that's been established at all.
Right. Right, exactly. So I think we should be very cautious watching for speculation like that in the media, because it seems to be at this point very, it doesn't seem to have any relation in fact, except that the fact that they have some family there.
Well, and then there's a family dynamic that came into play with both of those two. I felt for them. The two men who were tracked down by the camera crews, one of them being flagged down by a bunch of people with cameras as he was trying to drive his car to his home.
Oh, goodness.
It was kind of embarrassing, really. So there's two men over here and a sister. She's in Canada. And then the third brother is still back there, only he has gone from Chechnya to Dagestan and was interviewed by Russian television at his home in Dagestan. And he's the one who said that it was a frame job.
Yeah.
That his boys had been framed. But at the same time, you've got the uncle in Maryland, the one who was most expressive about all of this, who said he called his nephews losers.
Right.
And said that they were a shame upon the Chechen people, the Chechen ethnicity, that they were a shame upon their family. And he himself, I mean, again, my heart went out to him. And he said, "I'm prepared to fall on my knees and beg forgiveness before the families of the victims."
I saw that. Did you also notice his response when someone asked if the young men or any of their family had any connection with the Chechen conflict? Did you see his reaction to that? He was venomous. He almost spat. He said, "Of course not. Those people are separatists. They're rebels. We have nothing to do with them."
Yeah, I did see that, and that's why I asked the question.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I asked the question about whether or not, I mean, the very, very Russian patronymic of Tsarnaev,
right,
which is a reference, of course, to the Tsars themselves.
Yes.
And I don't know what the Naev suffix means, but
It's a patriotic name. It's not a rebel name. I mean, if you
right.
again extend it that far, and that's the assumption.
Yeah, and so a lot of stuff just doesn't work out, or doesn't seem to.
It doesn't work out as if there's any connection to any sort of international event. I think what you said.
Yeah.
From my point of view, it looks like Charles Pierce said it looks like Columbine. I kind of have to agree with him.
Yeah, it looks like a murder and not an act of war.
Exactly.
By the way, a little bit of fan mail coming in from Michael, Dr. John. Only on the horn, .. Great discussion, very informative and fascinating. Fairly certain Limbaugh hasn't covered this today, and God knows that lone wolf, Blitzer, would have howled. We'll have to leave it there about 45 seconds into a discussion of this caliber.
excellent extended metaphor too.
Yeah, lone wolf blitzer.
Yes, howling.
But to a certain extent, Dr. John, from an anthropological or sociological viewpoint, and especially given your background and previous career in journalism, do you not watch the coverage of all of this stuff with a certain amount of slack-jawed fascination?
I did. Honestly, for the first time today in several years, I was able to follow a breaking story like this, really since I was at CNN. And that's been a while. And I was very shocked by the inanity of it. And I guess I shouldn't be, but it was filling time. It was reporting speculation. It was saying the line, "This isn't confirmed, but," and then whatever you want to say after that. And I was very shocked by that.
And it's a real devil in the deep blue sea kind of thing for them, because on the one hand, I feel pity for those people outstanding in the nighttime streets who would like to say, "Can't we go to the weather guy for a little bit?" Because there's nothing left to say. But at the same time, they also know that if they cut away, then what happens if bang, 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 bang happens and it's not live? See, this is the curse, Dr. John, of the little girl down the well.
Yeah.
I've been contemplating that so much of late because of a post on over on Ed Rabel's Facebook page, and you know what gave us the rise of Fox, and I think I mentioned it a few nights ago. The theory put forth was that the rise of Fox comes from the failure of media surrounding the attack on Iraq, and I was the one who said no. Because I was there, and I was a working journalist when the little girl fell down the well,
mm-hmm.
And it was that moment. It's that, and less than a decade later, the OJ affair that completely changed the face of the idea of the 24-hour news cycle. Because I remember, you know, when I was 25 years old, sitting in an edit bay at CNN. Just watching a raw feed come in that was just a camera focused on the dig site around that hole in the ground that was the well that little baby Jessica fell down. And there was absolutely not a damn thing happening, but we had round-the-clock coverage that was utterly meaningless. And so now you don't dare cut away to cover another story. I mean, this is, after all, like I said, a week in which the President of the United States has been sent a poisoned letter. That is an assassination attempt on the President of the United States, Dr. John.
Not even to mention, as someone did earlier on, and I don't remember who, but thank you for that, the explosion in Texas. That is a clear-cut issue of a failure of environmental justice. That's a huge story. And it's profoundly important, and it has real-world implications for people still alive. But this is in the way, and I think that no one ever stepped back and asked the question whether round-the-clock coverage or whether gavel-to-gavel coverage is really something that we want or that's useful or that serves a function. We're in a time now where we know so many things, but we understand so little because of that overload, it seems to me.
And that's what I was talking about when I said I had horror and disaster fatigue.
Yeah.
I mean, I need to spend a day just walking in the woods or digging ramps or something. Because I feel like there's a sort of a processual cognitive debilitation happening in me. I know that may sound a little bit overblown, but the nature of what we do here is to just sit and absorb this information until finally you just got to walk out and, you know, some people put a straw in a tequila bottle, some people go dig ramps in the woods, some people sit and stare at their navel, but not, but if it's me, I got to think it's happening to the rest of the country, and to a larger extent, John, I think it's happening. It's not just because of the events of the last week. I think we've been on overload for years.
At least since 2001.
Yeah.
No, turning it off, going and digging ramps, reading a book with your kids, that is the best sort of therapy, I would think, for what you're describing, which is a real thing. Yeah.
But, you know, it's very difficult to do, John.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the little green button on the clicker is never more than an arm's reach away, because that's, TVs are our altars, our family, our household altars anymore, it would seem. By the way, Piedra, out of the chat room, is telling me that during a live interview on RT, the mother of the two young men said that she believes her sons have been framed, and went on to say that the FBI has been following Tamerlan for the last 5 years.
Well, that will feed an entirely new round of conspiracy and false flag talk, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's the last thing we need at this point.
Yeah, Ron and Raleigh writing in, Dr. John, saying, Today on the EIB network, we will be discussing the etymology of the name Tamerlane and its possible connection to the psyche of the Boston bomber. I guess not, huh? Says Ron.
Well.
But, okay, well, can I throw you another little, I don't know if it's ironic or not, but another little curveball?
Please.
So when I found out the young man's name was Tamerlane, I immediately thought of the historic figure. And then I remembered that Christopher Marlowe wrote a play about him. But I kept remembering that there was a poem, and I couldn't remember who by. And it turns out it was Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh.
And it turns out that Tamerlane, it's a long, long poem. It's an epic poem.
Mm-hmm.
Within the and that used as a stylistic designation, not like the epic movie of the year or anything, you know that.
It's epic, right.
Right, sure. This is an epic, it's a hero tale or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is the first poem he published.
Really?
And here's where it gets weirder. He didn't publish it under his own name. He published it anonymously, referring to himself as the author as simply a new Boston poet.
Oh, God. I got chills when you said that. That's creepy.
It didn't do me a hell of a lot of good.
Wow.
And so here's stanza number two, if you'll indulge me.
Mm-hmm.
The gay wall of this gaudy tower grows dim around me. Death is near. I had not thought until this hour, when passing from the earth, that ear of any, were it not the shade of one whom in life I made all mystery but a simple name, might know the secret of a spirit bowed down in sorrow and in shame. Shame, saidst thou? Aye, I did inherit that hated portion with the fame, the worldly glory, which has shone a demon light around my throne, scorching my seared heart with a pain not hell shall make me fear again.
God. Wow.
There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies, right?
That's a nicer way of saying what I like to say is that history is full of shocking coincidences, but they are just that.
Yeah, they are just that, but they are just. It feels. I don't know. It feels like two sets of dice being rolled hundreds of years apart, and I don't know. They both come up snake eyes.
It's all over you. Yeah, understood.
By the way, Jack in Shreveport offering up an observation, Dr. John. He says, I think the uncle used the term losers in the context of how the boys had tried to assimilate into American society. I was puzzled why a term like outcasts or lonely, etc., was not used, and I wondered if there was some cultural reason that losers was used. I heard in a separate report that the boys had few American friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that was a comment that the older one made. I have no American friends. I don't understand them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an opportunity, I think, that here, and I'm sure if there was a little right-winger listening, luckily there isn't, that we would both be roundly mocked for believing this kind of thing, that there is an opportunity here, that there is an opening here to talk, because, you know, the right wing is already having hissies about immigration. Well, this just goes to prove that we need... One of them said it. This goes to show that we need to tighten immigration, not relax it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an opening here to having a discussion about the immigrant life. Because the right wing is forever saying, John, that... Well, I mean, look at the English only and the English as an official language subspecies of these cretins. They want people. They want people to get Rosetta Stone English, you know, when they're sitting in Dagestan and come here fully fluent and I don't know, start writing Lolita like Vladimir Nabokov, or be fluent in six languages like Joseph Conrad. But we who have been here for generations really do not have an appreciation for the life of an immigrant and the struggles of being a stranger in a strange land.
That's true, and they're being constantly subjected to this ridicule, to this shame, to this closing of doors and opportunities. And I think what you're saying is that maybe some of the rhetoric and the actions of this anti-immigrant crowd may have influenced some of these feelings of alienation that bothered the person, these young men. Is that where you're going?
Yeah, even if alienation does not wind up being the triggering impulse behind all of this, and I realize that we are simply assuming that the story that has been given us is the truth.
Yes.
But even if that alienation is not ultimately the cause, it is something that we desperately need to understand. You know, another little irony. This is of course the Jewish Sabbath. You know, Friday evening sundown to Saturday sundown. And I was talking with Texas Betsy last night. She asked me to read over something for her because she was delivering the Torah lesson tonight at Shabbat. And we got to talking about how one treats one's fellow man, because far from, you know, beyond the don't eat shellfish and don't wear fibers of two fibers woven together stuff, there's a whole lot more in the Jewish law about how one behaves, how one manifests one's humanity in an attempt to be a better person. And there's that very famous verse where the children of Israel are told that they are to treat strangers in their land as if they were of their own family, their own clan, their own tribe. And the reason given is, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. And this is a country, John, that proclaims loudly, and quite often quite hypocritically, how pious we are. But we don't necessarily live it. We don't live. No, never mind the adverb. We don't live it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't reach out. You know, we say, okay, welcome to America, land of the free, home of the brave. Good luck. You're on your own. And after that, who knows?
That ties into something we've talked about before, which is this ideology of the free, rugged individual that has no connections to anything else. The fact is that the wisdom in that reading you were talking about recognizes that for most of human history, I'm going to wander into a different subject we can talk about more later, but for most of human history, your chances of getting by were much better the more people you had in your social network. It's beneficial to welcome strangers into your group because if you accept them, if they thrive, then when you have hard times, you can call on this person that you were nice to before and say, can you help me out here? And then they're obligated to help you. That's always been the story. That's why the idea of immigration historically has always been a good thing, because it increases the diversity, the strength, the workforce, the number of social ties people have, and this really profound individual freedom idea is against that, and it has very damaging effects, like you're talking about.
And so, you know, this whole thing, and of course, it's a matter of family dynamics too. The uncle indicating, you know, he hadn't talked to the boys in years. The father is in Dagestan. I haven't heard any. The mother, I guess, is in Russia. I'm not sure. And how did, you know, the two young men lived together. There was no adult in their lives. That's the missing piece of the puzzle for me.
Yeah.
And it would have been awfully nice if we could have had an answer along those lines, but oh well. But I don't even know that that's occurred to any of these people who are just looking for something to keep their mouth going.
Well, that would be an interesting avenue to pursue. Before I'll let you go, but just to say that I think where you're going with this idea of demonizing immigrants is a really important one. It's similar to the way that we see really, really bad outcomes among any other social group that is subjected to constant shaming. Teenage mothers, you know, women who have abortions, women who are rape victims. Every time that we see more and more hateful shaming of these people, we see tragedies like women taking their lives or children being born into poverty or things like that. So it's a very profound cultural thing to constantly ridicule and demonize a certain group. And we're not prepared to deal with the consequences of that, because I think we're not prepared to recognize that there is such a thing as culture.
And by the way,
it's Barry Thatcher, right?
Right. Oh, Jesus. May she rot in hell.
Yeah, there's no more culture, she said. So.
Right. And by the way, I don't know if I just read this earlier. A Bangladeshi woman and a Pakistani man have already been beaten.
God.
As a result of this. Meanwhile, my son was looking at one of his social networks, and one of the kids around here had tweeted or booked or whatever, effing Russians attack us. It's on, you commie bastards.
Oh, my God. I hope your son's not in the same school that kid is in.
Well, he ain't in. No, well, he would have been.
Because they're clearly not teaching him much, if you can say that. That's right.
And I just looked at him and said, so he's joking, right? And Ferg looks at me and goes, no, he's totally serious.
Good.
Meanwhile, one of the heroes and one of the wounded from the bombing on Monday. Well, I'm looking at a report here. This is the guy who was put in a wheelchair with most of his legs blown off, and he's trying to pay his bills by online crowdsourcing.
Oh God, this is the man that the anti-war activist helped.
Yeah.
This is that photo, that horrible photo.
Yeah.
He can't pay his bills, and he's trying to crowdsource it.
Yeah.
Well, I wish him luck with that. But
his greatest country in the world.
What a great commentary on the way we treat our people. My goodness.
Yeah, his name is Jeff Bauman. And he has a Bucks for Bauman page at GoFundMe.com for crowdfunding.
God.
So, what is it? I mean, I read stories like this and I become absolutely stymied, John. what does that tell us about the greatest country in the world here? Meanwhile, the story next to it, after making $2 billion in profits, insurer United Health Group complains it doesn't get enough government money.
This is the time for the tequila therapy, the rant therapy, the book with your kids therapy. It's, you know, at some point after a week like this, you gotta disconnect a bit. That's what I intend to do.
Yeah, but ultimately we, because we're the kind of people, the Horn family. We hope that someday there's gonna, we hope and we are willing to work toward, and I think that's the important part of this, a solution. But in the name of God or whatever, what is the solution in a country that sends a man who has had his legs blown off begging for his medical care while a multi-billion-dollar for-profit healthcare corporation is hollering they didn't get enough government welfare? And I guess I'm asking is, and this ties a little bit into the cynicism of our previous conversation this week, Dr. John. Do systems reach a point at which they may not any longer be repaired?
Well, it's yes in nature and mechanically. I don't know about culture. Culture is a frightfully complex system with many, many inputs. If you had to ask me, but what I would say, what is the solution? The solution is community group action. You know, it's built through very, very small things where people recognize and reach out and make ties with people in our family, in our neighborhoods, in our cities, and then use these relationships that we build through acts of kindness, dinners, block parties, you know, group political rallies, whatever, that gets built, those relationships get transferred into voting, into political action. But it's got to start by recognizing that we're not separate, we're not isolated. Humans don't do good on our own.
You know, that was and that
community.
That was something I was getting at last night when I was talking about the poor little proto-humans looking out into the terrifying night and realizing that the only way they were all going to be there the next morning was by group community action and mutual self-defense.
And that's exactly what happened. It served us well for 5 million years.
So where does this idea come from, John? I won't keep you much longer. I really appreciate the time this evening.
I've enjoyed it. I hope the commune is not just bored.
Oh, no, they're loving it. They're loving it. I got another note for you. Want this one from Kate here in a minute. But where does this, I mean, is, and maybe we can't even come up with an answer to this, but when you've got a species that evolves because of its success in using its big brains to overcome its physical deficits, you know, can't run fast like a cheetah, right, you got it.
Claws, yeah.
Yeah. No big sharp teeth, you know, just little grinders. Is it a genetic flaw that we develop this notion that we're all rugged individuals and no longer a part of a group?
Not a genetic flaw, sir. It is a flaw of greed and avarice. It benefits a few
to the detriment of the many.
Exactly, but that doesn't matter because we're all, again, individuals. It's a repeating cycle. Right?
So when these for-profit media goobers are out there salivating at the idea of calling these people, the bomber, you know, before we knew who they were, lone wolves, there's a desire in there. What is it to say that? They're lone wolves, or the "ooh, he was crazy" defense when somebody shoots up a school. Is this something that comes deep, Dr. John, where we just want to fundamentally deny that we give rise to monsters? Do our monsters have to be lone wolves?
Because we don't want them to be in the group. I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a psychological question, I think. I would say that from a really strictly basic level, I think the desire for talking about lone wolves and crazy people means that we don't have to face the facts that humans never act for no reason, and they never act outside of their environments, their cultural milieu. So if we're going to talk about people as crazy, we're going to talk about people as lone wolves, then we don't need to address the fact that other factors have influenced their behavior and maybe ask ourselves what we could do to change it.
And also, it provides us, I think, I suspect, a level of insulation against the idea that there might be something inside the culture that's making this happen.
That we might have to change our own behavior or lifestyle to prevent these things.
Or the culture itself. Deliberately created consumer culture that says everybody stays in their single family dwelling, and what I talked about years ago, the disappearance of the porch.
Yeah.
You know, where there's just steps up to the house and you're in the house and nobody sits on the porch, and because, you know, that's where community happens. That's where you wave at your neighbors from. Between the rise of TV and radio and the disappearance of the porch and communities' inabilities to put together gatherings, except for what happens on Sunday mornings, this is the isolation that bites us in the ass every now and then is created. These are not things that have been dropped on us like an anvil on Wile E. Coyote's head.
Mm-hmm.
And it does have to change. And I guess the overarching question then is, how does that happen and what does it look like? And I think that goes into a discussion that hopefully we'll have either when I get back from Washington or at some point, because we're contemplating a discussion, you and I, more you than me, I hope, about where inequality came from within the rise of human social structure.
Absolutely. That's a topic for that talk, and I'm looking forward to it whenever we can make it happen. I hope folks will enjoy it.
I think they will. Like I said, you've got a note in from Kate. She says, no ramps here. However, I too have disaster fatigue. After the trip to Mississippi to work with Katrina survivors for 3 months, I've had to come home to my little apartment, a weekly trip to the library and grocer, then back to my little nest, read, eat healthy food, and listen to university lectures on Canadian radio. I have no TV, no newspaper, and don't listen to U.S. media. All the domestic and international violence combined with all my trips to the Gulf Coast have fried me. On the verge of my 68th year, I am amazed at how and why we have gotten here. Words escape me, she says, with an exclamation point. She says, looking at the mountains or watching the grass grow in silence nurtures my spirit. Going out digging for ramps and ginseng would be a nice way for you to get centered. You want some crystal on that? And she says, thank you, John, for the history. You are very much appreciated.
Well, thank you, and that's outstanding. And what she's talking about, let's make very clear that this is not Kate disconnecting from the struggle. She'll never do that. This is a needed time to step back, recharge your batteries, decompress, come back into the fight, whatever the fight is, recharged. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that's what she's saying. It's not, don't turn off the TV because you don't ever care anymore. You're not going to engage with culture because you need to step back. And then you can come back and fight harder.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thanks, Kate. I appreciate that.
Dr. John, thank you, and I hope things are going well for you, and I look forward to our next conversation.
As always, thanks a lot, Bob. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye now. Calling from North Carolina, that is our buddy, Horn, archaeological, sociological, cultural commentary consultant. It's Dr. John. And let me, I didn't mention this at the beginning of the program, and that was that's a failing on my part. It's about a quarter past the hour, a quarter past the second hour of the program here, and we will take a little break here just for a second, a couple of minutes. This note in from Robert in Australia, he says, 20th of the month challenge from down under on the front porch today, a $75 challenge for the day's fundraising, and a $75 challenge for rebuilding the Horns data center. Signed, Robert from Oz. Thank you very, very much, Robert. And so let's reiterate this. Robert is matching $75. In other words, he's taking care of half of tonight's fundraising. If y'all will get the other half, that's 7.5 people at 10 or 10 people at 750. You know, you do the math. I ain't no good at it. And then he's got $75 on the table for jumping in with the Swede and taking care of some of the equipment needs. And believe me, hopefully we'll get everything squared away so we won't have to do this for another 5 years. So, and remember, the $75 challenge for rebuilding the Horns data center, that means Robert is entered in the naming rights drawing for the stuff that gets installed. And you too, if you contribute more than $20 for the naming to match the $75 Rebuild the Horn Data Center Challenge, then you too are entered in the drawing for the naming rights on things like power supplies and hard drives and CPUs, and it will be mentioned. It'll be mentioned. You know, broadcasting live via the good offices of Uncle Murgatroyd's Memorial Hard Drive or whatever. It's there for you. And I really thank Scott the Swede for that wonderful idea. Beats the hell out of naming the computer after a private prison company, doesn't it? By the way, a follow-up note from Kate. She says, on the other hand, chaos is all caps, always self-correcting. And Jan, me talking about put-upon-mountain people. Jan says under the subject line, mountain people. Yes, yes, the most put-upon-mountain people are the Swiss. Okay, point thick. So, it's break time. And we'll come back to your calls. You know the number, right? 304-658-3333. 304-658-3333. And you can also reach the program on the Skype line, and that is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And thank you very much for the contribution that just came in. We're a third of the way toward meeting Robert's evening funding challenge. And it is deeply appreciated, Frankie. We do. We really, really do. All right. Break time. Light up the phones. It's Friday on the front porch. The next time we talk, I'll be in Washington, D.C., and Agnes will be behind the board here. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is the Horn. And yeah, for the second time in a week, I'm going to the lyric genius of Al Stewart, who was once on this show.
To guide the flocks of the ships home, one by one, gray beneath the Arctic sun, or the glow of northern lights. I see you have his photograph. His eyes are watching for dangers, far or aft, trading days beneath the sun, for the cold and wintry nights of the Murmansk Run. childhood dream or two. Something of the cold got through, and it lingers in your eyes. On days like these you hear the wind and feel the chill of the ice floes closing in, trading days beneath the sun for the cold and wintry nights of the mama's ground. Dark and charted sea. Now you hide yourself from view. You seem to find it an easy thing to do, trading days beneath the sun for the cold and wintry nights of the merman's grunt. Every day for your money, yet there's nothing to save. Watching your life pass by the window, feeling it all run through your hands, counting the thousands behind in the lines, waiting time for the chance. From Ellis Island, day after day, from Ellis Island, dreams slip away. Meanwhile, from the market come the cries of every tongue and every nation. Refugeless refugees, faces from the endless plains of Russia, blonde, Norwegian, dark Croatian. Songs inside minor keys, feeling the heat inside the furnace, trying to make that break away, reaching the hands for a grip on the edge just to slip back again. From Ellis Island, day after day, from Ellis Island, dreams slip away. Oh well, I've heard it said, if you just use your head, you can make your fortune here. One lucky break and that's all it'd take, but it never seems to be near. Another day, another ship pulls into harbor and the crowds burst down the gangway, clutching their suitcases tight, blinking in the sunlight of the door of the new world they hold the hunger. Without a past thrown behind, caught in between now and forever, wondering just what lies ahead. Each one is waiting and hoping the door will be open to them. On Ellis Island, day after day. On Ellis Island, time slips away. From Ellis Island, day after day. From Ellis Island, dreams slip away.
Going on here. My confounded flag-nasted production machine is not signed out of Skype, even though I want it to be, although I've got it on a completely different machine over... Ah! Someday I'll have a producer, but I think... Yeah. I think we've got things sorted out. By the way, thank you very much. Good news. Sal and Brandon are each entered in the naming rights drawing. Thank you very much. And we're $10 away from matching Robert's data center challenge and $20 away from matching his evening funding challenge. So that's wonderful. We will go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, bro, Bob. How you doing?
What's happening, Jim?
Listen, I enjoyed the phone call with Dr. John very much.
Isn't he just brilliant?
He's a very, very intelligent, very, very, very perspicacious individual. He really is.
Well, I tell you what, I think his students are lucky to have him in the classroom with him.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to mention a couple of things, and I'll get off here because I know it's Friday on the front porch, and everybody needs to take a long swig after this week.
Amen.
But, you know, Tamerlane, when I saw that guy's name up there, I thought, Tamerlane, or Tamer, whatever it was. And I remember from having read Harrison Salisbury's 900 Days about the invasion of Russia by Hitler, that the very day before that happened, Soviet archaeologists had, in fact, opened Tamerlane's tomb, which was, according to tradition, as I sent in my email, the source of all war and conflict, and they did in fact discover that he had a deformed leg.
Yeah, he. I was reading about that earlier today. He had some sort of injury to his hip, and the story went that when he was a teenage boy, he had been caught trying to steal sheep and had received wounds, two arrow wounds.
That's correct, absolutely. But
and
he
was
there.
Yeah, he was forever rendered lame in one leg by that, and thus in the Persian language, it's the word for lame is very much cognate to our word lame, and he was Timur the lame.
Exactly.
Timur Lang, or I think is what it was.
Right. And I was just wondering, maybe my hearing is not good. Did Dr. John say patriotic or patronymic?
Well, we were using both words, and he used the word patriotic in noting that a word, a patronymic with czar in it, for instance, Tsarev, would be seemingly unusual for a member of the Chechen separatist resistance.
Yeah, I was just wondering about that, because, for example, on the male side in a Russian family, if a boy has a father named Nicholas, his name would be Alexis Nikolaevich.
Right.
Romanov. And if he had a daughter, it would be Olga Nikolaevna Romanov. And that's how the middle name in the Russian language is. It means son of or daughter of.
Right. And so Sarajev would roughly translate as? And wouldn't that be son of Tsar?
Yeah, I guess so. But not with the I-T-C-H, but I guess there are definite etymological derivations or word derivations of that.
And all of this may be utterly meaningless, but they are the, you know, they're the little details that, well...
That make life interesting to me.
Well, and the same here, Jim, the same here.
I mean, you know, these are things that just sort of make me go to my books and whatever I have at hand to discover, you know, exactly what this means. And one other thing, and I'm gone. Orpheus and Eurydice. Did anybody ever answer that for you?
Yeah, it's Eurydice. Yeah. Although there is a back reference from Eurydice to Persephone. But
do you know that story?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
About how Orpheus had to go into the underworld?
Right, and Plato goes on and says, I think it's in the Symposium,
one condition of that
he could not turn back to see her.
Exactly.
And he got out and turned around, and she wasn't out yet, and she disappeared. But Plato argued that that was entirely a fraud perpetrated on Orpheus by the god of the underworld, Hades.
Yeah, and poor Orpheus went back with his lyre and was later killed violently or something like that.
Well, nobody comes to a good end in Greek mythology.
No, they don't.
He was torn to pieces by the Minods.
Or whatever. Yeah, he was. And, you know, basically they'd just been married and she was stung by a viper. And that's when she had to go into the world of Hades. And, of course, he made a deal. And that's when he was able to draw iron tears down Pluto's cheek and make hell grant what love did seek. And then, of course, the deal was made, and he couldn't quite not look back at his beloved, you know?
Yeah, there's always a
and
a catch.
The one thing I remember about that, my mother had a whole set of Tales of the Olympian Gods narrated by Ronald Coleman.
Oh, my.
And when I was a kid, no wonder I turned out the way I did. But nonetheless, I used to sit and listen to those stories, and... Of course, the text was written by Edith Hamilton.
Oh, well, brilliant.
And, I guess while other kids were doing other things, when I was in the eighth grade, I was sitting there listening to Ronald Coleman and, you know, asking questions about this, that, and the other.
And, of course, I was always a big fan, and still am. I go back and reread them periodically, the novels of Mary Renault.
Oh, yeah, the Greek boy, the Persian boy, and all these
The king must die, yeah.
Right. Well, listen, you've got other people wanting to talk to you, and I just thought I would ask that. And is there anything else here I wanted to say? No, I don't think so. That's it. So,
all right. Well, Jim, you have a very good weekend.
Yeah, you have a good trip in Washington playing your route into the underworld of that city.
Well, here, I know. Take care, Jim.
Out here.
Bye now. Jim calling from not at all very far from here. And let's go to the Skype line. Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob. Can you hear me?
I got you good.
So it's funny how we haven't heard anything about mental health or anything on this one. Notice that?
You know, that is missing from the discussion.
What's that, you know?
Well, I guess, you know, there's no...
Because it's Muslim-related, I guess, so there's health there.
Right. Well, no, there's a mental health angle, but in the American NRA mindset, they're all crazy in the first place.
Right. Well, no, I just, you know, because if you, you know, it's always interesting to evaluate the various horrible narratives coming out of this hideous mainstream media. My God, it's been revealed to be just a nightmare.
Okay,
on the media system.
So John and I aren't the only ones who are. I mean,
it's terrible.
I mean, I hate to even use the analogy in conjunction with the horror that pre-exists, but just the way the media are handling this
is
a slow moving train wreck. You can't help but watch.
I know. I really haven't seen anything like it. It's just outrageous. But the only other thing I wanted to mention right quick was, this is like, I'm so mortified, but the Czech Republic embassy had to issue a statement saying, oh no, we have nothing to do with Chechnya.
Stop it.
It's just horrific. It's horrifying. It's like OMG.
No, real. The Czech Republic is being confused for Chechnya.
They've been trending. People are thinking that, you know, they have something to do with this, and it's like, oh no, with the geography issues and the dumbasses in this country.
Is this where that foundation issues its annual report saying we couldn't find our asses with a map?
Right. Anyway, I just thought. I realize it's all so serious at this point, but that was just like, wow.
Well, that reminds me of when Dim Leader confused Austria and Australia.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there is that.
But so far, I mean, as much of a problem as we have with him on so many issues, at least I don't think we have to worry about the president not sure calling John Brennan into the office and asking him to find him a reason to go bomb Prague.
Well, no, he's careful to a fault, Obama, except for when he's, you know, catcalling women. He kind of slipped up on that, but oh well, can't be perfect.
Wait, what? Wait, what?
Oh, he catcalled our attorney general out here. He said, oh, you didn't hear about that story?
No.
Oh, no. Obama was, doing a fundraiser, and he was introduced talking about her. He said, she's the attorney general, and she's the, you have to admit, she's the best-looking one out of them all. So, just straight up like, what? And so he had to apologize. He went on, and it was like, why are you apologizing, Obama? You missed that story, Bob?
No.
That was hilarious.
Mercifully, I missed it.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a misstep for Obama. He usually don't misstep like that. But, listen, my big thing is, why are they locking down a whole city, telling people to stay indoors?
I'll be honest. I've been asking. Well, like I said, we didn't lock down New York City after September 11th.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, well, it seems like the police state is escalating after every event is being now turned into a disaster capitalism type of moment. You know what I mean? Like, oh, here's a crisis. Let's roll out this one. Because they got on TV talking about you need to stay in unless it's a police officer at your door. I'm like, what does that sound like?
Well, what happens if you step outside your door?
Well, everyone, they were always talking about people hanging outside, and they would pop out, and then they'd run back in. I'm like, oh, my God, then what?
Well,
go out shopping after it's all done.
Disney,
what the hell?
Disney World.
Guess what? Anyway, I don't know. I don't mean to be flippant, but I do find the lockdown a bit disturbing because Boston's a pretty damn big place, and we're talking about a teenager.
One human being.
And what didn't Obama say? We're courageous and all that. What happened to that? He said that on Wednesday, now we have people locked in their house.
But Sandra, in line with all of this, did you hear the discussion of what the nuts and bolts of the search are or were? By the way, the shelter in place has been lifted. I saw that a few minutes ago.
No, but I know. I was listening, or not listening, but, looking at what was going on last night. First you had the cop at the MIT taken out, and then it just turned into, grenade throwing and people running over their brother and, just straight up mayhem. Did you catch any of that last night?
I was watching it all and just aghast. But later on, Sandra, they described what the search the technique was. And they were talking about this, what was it, 20 square block area of Watertown that was just locked down tight. And they said, a police officer will come to your
door.
A police officer will come to your door, knock on your door, announce himself as the police, and then you open the door, and then they come in and search your house.
That's what I saw, but I was thinking, no, I'm not hearing that right. Because, so all of your...
Is there a 19-year-old bomber exception to the Fourth Amendment?
That's what I'm saying. Everything's been suspended. And the thing that's a real worry to me is the compliant factor. People comply, and that's where you get real worried, because, well, okay, there's no people not questioning, and it's sort of like, I suppose, you know, because the Constitution really is sort of gone, I guess.
Well, I mean, that was the first thing that occurred to me. If the police ask to, and this goes back to that cup of coffee I had in law school.
They ain't coming to my house.
But if the police come to your house and say, "May we search?" and you say yes, well, you've consented to the search.
If you say no, aren't you entitled to? They need to have a warrant, right?
Right. You need to go get a warrant.
I mean, you can say that to them, which is what would be, rolling out of my mouth, because I'm like, what the hell? So that just sounded crazy, and, you know, we're just going to ask you really nicely to stay inside, don't come out. I'm like, ooh.
Something breaking here. I just saw this from Isaac. He says, CBS Boston...
They've taken the cover off the boat? He's on a boat?
Yeah, and Jim just said second victim found in boat. I don't know if Jim means second suspect or on the waterfront in Boston.
Okay, so is he alive? Is he dead?
See, that's...
Has he been reanimated? I mean, what's happening?
CNN still reporting, where is he hiding? Door-to-door hunt comes up empty.
Apparently, CBS report police are using thermal imaging equipment to track suspect in boat.
Authorities engage possible bombings suspect in Watertown, a senior federal official. And that's under their breaking news. And it's the latest... wow, that's just strange. I don't
see this person remaining alive. What are your thoughts?
I think back to, well, last night I mentioned, you know, a couple of characters named Booth and Oswald.
Right. No, I'm thinking about that so-called $800 they took out of somebody's bank account when they, you know, robbed them. I'm like, what bank account allow you to take that much out the ATM?
I don't know. Well, you know, Cambridge.
Maybe
extra because it's Cambridge.
I just thought that was a bit strange. So it's all sounding a bit strange.
But the thing is, this whole effort, I mean, they were talking about entire busloads, the entire Boston Police Department and every law enforcement element probably in a 100-mile radius descended on Watertown, and it was done lickety-split. So, can we contemplate for just a minute, Sandra, that you can't just coordinate those logistics overnight, that has to be a previously
laid out
plan, and, you know, you push the red button, and that's how it... I mean, have you seen the pictures? And I'm not trying to be anti-police here or anything. That's not my intent at all, but it's a little spooky when you see... For all intents and purposes, something of the size of an army unit just completely locking down a pretty good sized community.
Well, no, but it's crazy. I mean, I'm still stuck on the don't come out of your house. I'm like, what in the world? It just sounds so un-American. You see what I mean? It's like. You know, like Homeland, it falls into that realm.
Right.
And, you know, when Donna was shooting everybody up in L.A., they nobody locked down nothing there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I just think that it's really over the top. I understand that the marathon was bombed, and this is a fairly serious thing, but to say to upward of a million people, you need to stay your ass in the house?
And you might and yet at the same time in the chat room, Lottie said that he's been able to go out and do whatever he, you know, needs to do.
Well, of course. I mean, they're not. I mean, yeah. It's just, you know, there's no way they're going to be enforcing that. But it still hasn't stopped them from, you know, implementing some kind of lockdown. You know, for people who ain't had nothing to do with this bullshit. Your movements are now curtailed. And the Czech Republic isn't Chechnya, just in case people forgot.
Oh, Jesus, that just blows my mind.
Anyway,
but
I
but they're reporting, I was just looking in the chat room here, they're reporting gunfire at a yacht club.
They said they may have explosive device on his body, there's that.
But the thing is, if they kill this one too, how the hell are we ever going to know why it happened? Or are we just not interested, Sandra?
Well, no, there's always that. The fact that we're so quick to just exterminate now, you know, that seems to be the bent towards everything. You never get any answers. And then if you keep doing that, you have to start wondering, well, you know, what's really going on? I keep waiting for one of them InfoWar people to pop up again with more questions.
Oh, Jesus. Is this a false flag?
Oh, my God. That was like, wow. In the meanwhile, though, you got this poor West Texas that's just been sort of destroyed. And where's the coverage?
You know, they cut away to it for 2.5 minutes when the guy or woman on the scene standing on the street with nothing going on has to take a break from saying there's nothing going on.
Well, I see that horrible Rick Perry is President Negro's best friend now, huh? That is so disgusting. I hate Rick Perry. I think that he's like one of the worst politicians in this country, you know?
Did you say President Negro?
Sorry.
No. No, don't apologize. Just, you did it to me.
Well, you know.
Well, no. I mean, I love that Rick Perry. I thought it was just precious that Rick Perry could. Well, you know, yeah, we was thinking about secessionating, but well, I was, you know, that OxyContin make you say funny things, and I didn't really mean it. But would you get us some federal disaster aid down here, boy? Chop chop.
Yeah, well, no, but you know, Obama calling up folks. He's trying to handle all the madness, so he called that idiot on his way to Boston, you know. So, President Obama, he definitely know how to, you know, manage. He didn't get that PR award for nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't have no problems with how he handles himself, you know, superficially. After Bush, my God, you know what?
Well, everything looks more professional after
That's
Bush.
That's what I mean. So,
by the way, Isaac has entered the tastelessly humorous sweepstakes too.
Okay.
Media report: they're luring the man of Eastern European descent out of the boat, offering him an expensive velour tracksuit.
Oh, shit. You know what? That's terrible. Right along with the uncle talking about, oh, no, I don't know them. I don't know. You know, I'm thinking, I know that's right. This ain't like them people in Newtown who can talk and be considered separate. These poor people, if they're associated with this madness, they got to duck and cover and try to get the hell away.
Right.
So the uncle was like, oh, you know, really trying to distance himself, you know, and you got to shake your head because
felt bad, especially. I mean,
know what it's like.
The first uncle who had very good English was really, really ferocious and fierce and pissed off. The second uncle, he said, "You talk to my brother; he speak English much more good than me," and they wouldn't go away.
Mm. I mean, well, I like that they're being set up. You know, that's always a good one.
Yeah, but I mean, but really, in this country, what do you do? What are your rights, Sandra, when the for-profit media will not leave you the F alone?
Oh, I know. I mean, I just, and on a more serious note, apparently there's been two brutal assaults against a Bangladesh woman and some other person behind this shit, you know.
Yeah, beat hell out of them.
And that's the media's fault right there, straight up, it's just terrible.
Well, I saw Martin Bashir talking to Richard Engel on MSNBC, and I swear I thought the two of them were going to start masturbating every time they said Muslim.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it was there nothing more embarrassing than Wolf Blitzer? That's why I had to roll out that "so poor and so black" that shit.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
I listened to that, I thought, oh my God, you know, he's a real horror story. He really needs to retire. It's time to go.
Right. Well, it's like what Michael said in that email a little bit ago. Where was it? He said, Dr. John and I would have been 45 seconds into the conversation when Wolf said, well, there's no more time for that.
Oh, God. No, but then he was the one talking about, is he American? Is there an accent? I mean, you know, dark-skinned individual, dark brown, is there an accent? I mean, it was just, you know, horrific.
Is he a Schwarzer?
Oh, God. You know, and you just sort of wishing that U-boat would just pull up and take his ass away.
Just bobbing along in the inflatable life raft. I'm ready now. We'll have to leave it at that.
I mean, Logan is right near the ocean. Take a hike, man. Shit.
But then that last night's coverage, and I admit most of what I've been watching has been CNN, that horrible, horrible, god-awful disaster of a human being, Erin Burnett.
Oh, no, she's... Listen, I'm she's horrific. Unbelievable. I mean, that is what's replacing Soledad. And I know Soledad is about as glad as she can fucking be to be away from that madness, okay?
Where's she going, though? Has there been any announcement?
I don't know. But it ain't there. And, I mean, as far as I can tell, it's a good thing. I mean, hopefully she'll pop up somewhere. But, I mean, that station has... it's imploded. I don't understand how it got so bad.
when they started getting their asses kicked by Fox.
Oh, right. They tried to go to the lowest. They have to sort of reach for. I'm wondering if those poor kids, they must have a lawsuit, no? Those two boys?
Who knows?
I mean, I don't know what protection, because I know that the media, you know, has sort of skated all sorts of lawsuits because of the Constitution. But, I mean, it's just outrageous what they did to those teenagers, you know?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I honestly don't know. I mean, now we've got this story coming out, you know, the horrible story about the young woman in Canada who hanged herself after being... raped and ignored.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Now they're flyering. They're even flyering the girl's mother's home with flyers. Stay strong and support the boys. Speak the truth.
Yeah. I mean, that story is really awful. I mean, didn't the incident happen 2 years ago, and she had no justice and. It just all got too much, and she did herself in, right?
Yeah. Four boys at a party, and then she was bullied, slut-shamed, and the photographs were circulated. But, of course, the support the boys people are... And she was a liar. It never happened. It's disgusting.
Well, I'm just wondering, have you seen that... Has that Pam Geller made another appearance? I know she's having some sort of orgasm on TV. She's really scary, that woman.
Oh, she would happily pull triggers if they would just tie her up some Muslims and, you know, put them in front of her. She's disgusting.
Really, she's really quite disturbing, that one. But yeah, I mean, what was you gonna say about Burnett though? What was she doing in particular?
She was just doing stand-ups, and she has all the empathy of a banana slug.
No, she's nasty. I mean, I first time I noticed her was around the Occupy, and I'm like, oh no, and it's sort of been downhill.
Oh, and she's married. She's married to some disgusting right winger, isn't she?
Well, she's married to
a Goldman Sachs exec,
City Group type exec. And she worked for Goldman herself.
She worked for Goldman, right.
And now she's married to one of them, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, you're not fit to be a journalist, you know what I mean? It's hideous.
Well, she just isn't, she isn't one, and it just comes out in everything that she says.
But I just wonder what the, you know, I mean, this the long term implication of this event is pretty disturbing. I mean, if they can just sort of demand lockdowns like this, it's a bit much.
Well, I'm spending quite a bit of time in Washington, D.C. lately, and I got to figure it's going to be plenty weird next week.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure. I'm sure. You know, what's going on in Chicago? They're like, it's so much rain that they have to put all the sewage in the lakes now.
Yeah, that's gonna be nice. That's going to be great
for
Lake Michigan. Well, it's everything.
I mean, is it some outrageous amount of torrential rain or what?
That was my understanding. But the thing is, we've also got the essential infrastructure for any major city is how old, Sandra? 50 years? 75? I mean, you can't just neglect this stuff.
Yeah.
Because it will eventually tell on you.
No, but you can, because what's coming up next is a public-private partnership that Rahm Emanuel is putting together so these giant corporations can buy up everything and just provide wonderful service for all of us.
Jesus, how long is it before the Brondo really does come out of the water fountains?
Yeah, so that's what's going on. I mean, I think that it seems at this point it has to be deliberate now to destroy as much of the commons as possible and then privatize it. That's the plan, I think.
Right, sell it off for cheap.
Yeah, and extract more, you know, even more money from us for every possible service you can possibly imagine.
CNN reporting, by the way, Boston PD tweeted, there are police operations on Franklin Street in Watertown. CNN crew at the scene heard gunshots and saw several law enforcement vehicles race toward the scene.
And this Boston Globe is saying police appear to be preparing a robot with a camera to approach the boat.
He's dead. I mean, they're not going to let him live. Because, well, I got to thinking about, would these would all be state charges, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, I just think that it's, like you said, dead on arrival. But this Max Blumenthal is tweeting that the Boston PD scanner suddenly removed from the app that he uses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was also disturbed by the reports. I don't know if they were true or it was just some rumor of them turning off cell phone services because they were worried about it detonating bombs. Remember that?
Yeah.
Was that fake or was that for real?
I never heard any more of it.
But you did hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but do you understand the implications of that? The sort of switch off the internet and any kind, you know, that kind of stuff is disturbing too. It's like, they can't just switch off landlines. So once again, Luddite, here I come. You know what I mean? I'm scared of that. If when they have switches or back doors or, you know, that's not cool.
No, I think all of this is incredibly fragile. And, and you know, while all this was going on, CISPA quietly passed the House a couple of nights ago.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, and once again, we have to rely on the threat of a veto that Obama made. Is this what we're relying on now?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Well, I don't know. I mean, do you think will it get through the Senate?
It may not. It could be there's Ron Wyden. I can't think of who else would.
Well, I don't know. Maybe progressive hero. I love that word, progressive. Hero Rand Paul would filibuster it. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe something. I mean, I think that, you know, everything goes to the Senate to die. I mean, I couldn't even believe that spectacle of this past week with the gun business. Wow, it was sort of like the plutocracy was just like, bam, you know, no illusions anymore there. Even Obama looked crazy. I'm like, ooh. You know?
Oh, I wish I had a recording of that noise you just made. Ooh.
Well, he did. He was looking a bit stressed out. I'm like, well.
No, he had a I want to slap somebody look on his face.
Yeah, he was kind of like, no, when he said, are they serious? I was like, oh, don't go black because you won't come back. Get it together.
By the way, no, it's not at a yacht club or anything. CBS News reporting, official Boston Marathon bombing suspect surrounded. Police surround a man hiding in a boat in backyard of home in Watertown. And they got a picture of the house and the boat.
Oh, so he's currently alive? Is that what we're hearing?
Yeah. That's...
And are we supposed to believe that this dude ran over his brother? Is that... I don't know if I believe that. That sounds crazy.
And I guess they're just taking down all kinds. Here's a photograph of a bunch of paramilitary dressed police taking down some kid who was just walking across campus at UMass Dartmouth. And I mean, he's redheaded. I mean, granted, he's a white guy, and, well, we all look alike, but he's a redhead. So who knows? But I mean, this. There are elements of this, Sandra, that feel very much like a corner being turned with the rise of the police state. I know no better way of putting it.
Well, it's not even the rise. It's the unveiling, Bob.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, as it is, what was it Luxembourg who said you don't feel your chains if you don't move? It kind of has that feel about it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, you know, it's like, oh, shit, what?
And see, I've got just a little bit of an, I've got just enough of an oppositional personality that there's just something, and this is Boston, for God's sakes. You know, the reason we've got the quartering of troops amendment in the Bill of Rights is because of what the British did to the people of Boston and New York. And so... There's just some sort of a dissonance between that and this don't leave your home citizen business.
Well, yeah,
and we're here to search your house.
No, civilian, not citizen.
Yeah, civilian.
That's the thing, civilian, which is like, okay, that's just a step up from consumer. Don't leave your house, consumer. You
right,
know,
yeah.
I'm a citizen.
Subject.
The last time I checked.
Yeah, subject.
Well, it is a bit of a worry, and I do, you know, it does seem to be a bit of a reveal is what's going on here, because this wasn't, nobody was locked down in New York in 2001.
No, and I mean, it really, I mean, you couldn't get south of whatever street it was, but that's because of the rubble and the toxins and the fouled air, and but there was no, you know, nobody was told to stay home.
Well, and
this is fascinating, Sandra. You know how Mama said that the FBI had been following her son for years.
Right.
Well, guess what? After initially denying any previous contact with either brother, the FBI said it did interview Tamerlane 2 years ago at the request of a foreign country government about possible extremist ties. The FBI said it did not find any derogatory information about him and closed the case file.
Cue Alex Jones.
Next. Next on Prison Planet.
Oh, my God. You know, yeah, listen, I'm not feeling the, it just seems to be totally over the top. Some of the photos I've seen with the equipment that's being rolled out is like, oh, wow, you know. So,
yeah, these armored personnel carriers.
Yeah, it just seems like I said, a reveal. That's the way I'm going to sort of look at this, because... you know, Pat, what's his name? The governor?
Oh, Deval Patrick?
He's pleasant looking. You know, it's like the long as the trains run on time, motherfucker. You know what I mean? So, I'm, you know, a bit concerned. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, and this is Boston. But let's not forget, you know, the rest of the country is, displaying solidarity with the people of the area.
Well, yeah, by naming the Czech Republic as the perpetrator of all this.
Well, there's that, but then there's this this goober from Arkansas, Nate Bell.
Is this the one they need? They don't have enough guns or something?
I wonder. This is what he tweeted.
I wonder how many Boston liberals spent the night cowering in their homes a-wishing they had an AR-15 with a high-capacity magazine.
I don't know how to respond. I don't know what to say to that. That is just so ignorant. Oh my God.
And then there's Herman Cain was not to be outdone.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Herb Cain. Just wondering, wouldn't it be good right now if everyone in Boston had a gun? Yeah, that'd be just great, Herb.
Oh no. And them people and these people are from areas that he don't know nothing about. Wasn't he the one talking about he didn't know the different stands and all this stuff?
Yeah, that's Herb.
He's terrible. Who asked him to chime in? Is he on a radio station?
No, anybody can get a Twitter account, Sandra.
Oh, he tweeted. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I missed when you said that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, and by the way, Peter in Vermont just wrote in. He said, hey, y'all. People from Vermont don't say y'all. But he said, there's no Fourth Amendment within 100 miles of any national border in the USA pursuant to DHS directive. They just gotta think you might be doing the Terra. Vermont has one of those armored personnel carriers, too. The cops need it for the maple syrup thieves and the cow tippers.
Oh, no. Listen, Vermont, man, I've been there. That's a beautiful place. Can't imagine, but hey, you know.
Yeah.
Been to Boston, too, though, and I'm still sort of a bit traumatized. I'm like, you know. It's horrible that it's just how rapidly it turned into some sort of occupied place.
But that's America. And you know, it's for your own good, right?
Yeah. But then they at the moment though, they've lifted the stay in the house.
Yeah, cuz they've got the boat
type situation.
Right, because they've got the boat surrounded.
Okay, so the million people can now move around freely. Is that what we're being told?
You are now free to move around the country.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. Okay, well.
Go about your business. Go about your business, civilian.
Well, listen, I'm sure there's somebody else waiting to talk, but it's been a hell of a week. I don't know what to say.
I, honest to God, I need a weekend. I have not had a weekend in which I just got to sit on my butt. I don't know how long it's been. So, you know, tomorrow we've got a Dr. Bill chat, and I do enjoy those. I always enjoy them. And then on Sunday, I'm on the road again. You know, cue up Willie Nelson.
Yeah, well, no, you're going back to D.C. Yeah, like you said, I guess you'll let us know what the state of mind that place is in. I bet it's pretty bizarre.
It's weird enough as it is. Bo and I were walking back from a meeting on the House side 2 weeks ago, and, you know, we usually walk across that plaza in front of the Capitol, you know, that's across from, you know, that side of the Capitol that's across from the Supreme Court.
Mm.
And we go to and there's this guy in paramilitary gear with a machine gun, and you can't cross the Capitol. Okay. And lo and behold, we started looking around, and these guys were fanned out all the way around the Capitol grounds, and you could not get on the grounds of the Capitol.
Wow. Well, I mean, this is the problem with endless money devoted to this security apparatus. I mean, it has to flow somewhere, and so we see the police departments are, like, just armed to the teeth around, you know, like every town in the country, apparently.
And
listen, did you get a chance? I know this is not related, but did you get a chance to listen to that Oopsie Daisy homophobe?
Oh, I played that at the end of the show last night.
Okay, well, I didn't hear that. OMG, I couldn't even believe that. That was so damn funny.
Well, the fact and the fact that he used, you know, that he basically karaoke'd the Accidental Racist song was.
Oh yeah, no, that whole thing was just, that is so horrific. I mean, and you know, LL Cool J, he need to be, I'm about to say he need to be flogged, but him and his, if you forgive us, if you forgive my, jewelry, I'll forgive the chains, or, you know, from slavery. I mean, the lyrics are just outrageous. He ought to be ashamed of himself for even being involved in
that. Yeah, and that doesn't seem like much of a bargain, really.
That's what I'm saying. And it's just a joke.
Well, what the hell happened to him? I mean, didn't he used to be kind of edgy and stuff?
I don't know, roundaway girl. I don't know what happened to him.
And of course, like I said last night, Brad Paisley is a devoted supporter of mountaintop removal.
Well, no, but, it's like, you know, we just have the long tradition of these sort of black folks that will accommodate this madness, I guess, until the end of time.
Isn't there a colloquialism for folks like that?
What do you mean?
Well, let's see. There's
Tom?
There's that, and there's a two-word phrase that begins with the word house. And...
Oh, yeah, well, no, but that just makes you want to bust out the Malcolm X discussion, which, you know, that never gets old. We sick, okay? That speech.
Yeah.
Never gets old, and it's always just perfect for almost every occasion.
Yeah, because, you know, Malcolm was so scary that, it's not like white folks will go and read a Malcolm X speech because, you know, he was frightening and he didn't like us. You know, we're gonna stay nice and safe and comfortable with Dr. King.
Oh, yeah, until we're not, and then we'll just take him out on a balcony at a hotel.
Right, and lo and behold, you know, this is this week was the anniversary of the letter from Birmingham Jail.
Which is that's great. That's a great piece of writing.
Well, it is, but the thing is, a lot of people forget who he wrote it to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I was hoping you were gonna go there because, yes. And that should be, that always should be brought up when you talk about that letter.
He was writing it to mealy-mouthed, lily-livered, middle-of-the-road white clergy that were saying, well, you know, yes, 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 Dr. King, we understand how it is with you people. And we certainly support you and we pray for you. But really, do you have to have these protests and these boycotts? And that's just not, I mean, it's not done.
No.
It's not cricket.
No, but no need to worry anymore, Whitey, because we got LL Cool J and Lil Wayne. All is well and safe, okay?
Lil Wayne. Oh, God.
Well, no, I'm going to beat that pussy like Emmett Till.
Yeah,
this
I know.
This is what we have to endure now, and it's just mortifying as a person of color. I just shake my head thinking, oh, my God,
and run screaming back to Malcolm's. We be sick.
We sick. Yes, that's a refuge, definitely. Anyway, Bob, listen, I'll let you go. Have a good weekend.
Hey, you too, Sandra. It was a great conversation. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye. It is beneficial to go and read Malcolm X. It is. Well, it's just not quite as safe. But in many ways, it's often as or more relevant. Jack, writing in from Shreveport, says, I guess those quick police mobilization plans, cell phone kill switches and whatnot, could come in handy up in the Boston area, seeing that it's a mecca of ivory towers of elites and students available for protests. Yeah, that's very true. Reckon maybe that's why it was put in. No, I'm not gonna get all Alex Jones on anybody. Yeah, Marty, Whoopsie Daisy Homophobe is Stephen Colbert's, and you can find it over at Comedy Central, Stephen Colbert's answer to accidental racist. Peter, writing in from Vermont, he says, I love Sandra because her laughter is so hearty and genuine. Very funny, too. Oh, all of the above, Peter, all of the above. To the phones? Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Juanita. How are you?
I'm fine, Juanita. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm trying to make it, Bob.
Emphasis on the word trying.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I just wanted to call in and get in on the subject. I basically did not watch any coverage of the bombing until today, because I pretty much knew, you know, what the media was going to do. You know, first they call out Clint Van Zandt, who is an incompetent boob. And then, you know, they'll name the heroes. And then they'll do the candlelight vigils and all that kind of stuff. And nothing will be solved. But I did turn on MSNBC this afternoon, and I was probably, I saw the Richard Engel piece, but they had Michael Isikoff on, and I don't know which show he was on, but they played the clip of the uncle, and, you know, the one that was very outspoken and very, very animated. He said, you know, that the young guy was from Kyrgyzstan. And immediately when he said Kyrgyzstan, I said, well, here comes the Muslim angle.
Sure. Yeah, you could, I mean, you could see it from a mile away, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. And so Michael Isikoff then turns around and says, well, there is, and I'm paraphrasing, there is no doubt that the Chechens, excuse me, I can't pronounce it, are admirers of Osama bin Laden. I mean, just pull that out of his mouth. Just
a blanket statement. Every one of them, from little babies in the cradle to the old folks on the way out, everybody admires Osama in Chechnya.
Yeah, and, you know, Isikoff, during the Bush years, he was a big cheerleader of Bush.
Oh, yes, he was.
And Rachel Maddow is the one who helped resurrect his career. But, you know, I really, just like you were talking to Sandra and to the doctor about the media, it is just, it's excruciating to watch it all. I mean, it really is. And Richard Engel, did you notice, Bob, that he said he'd never been to Chechnya? He proceeds to go ahead and comment on it anyway.
Right. Well, I've never been to Chechnya, but let me tell you, it's a lovely place.
Let me tell you what they do. And so I tell you, I just hate the way they handle it. Now, you've noticed, Bob, also, we've already seen these young men's mother on television. I've seen the dad. I've seen the uncle. Jared Lautner, I've never seen his parents. The guy who shot at the movie theater.
Right.
I mean, who are his relatives?
Well, there was a little bit about Jared Lautner's dad. He was apparently a high-flying, either technology or finance guy from San Diego that was tied into one of the big banks.
Well, is it him or was it Lanza? Because,
well, no, Lanza was a VP of collections or debt security or whatever as well.
We don't know who those people are.
But here's the fascinating thing, and I don't want to go down the so-called conspiracy theory rat hole or anything. But
go ahead.
It never ends well, Juanita. I forget if it was the mother or the father or both said that they had already been the father got interviewed by RT. The mother, I think it was, said that she had been visited, get this, earlier in the week by Russian state security.
Wow.
And of course there was that bit, the FBI denied ever having profiled and questioned and searched the older of the two young men, but now they're admitting that they did 2 years ago, but they found nothing to worry about.
Well, be darned. Well, you know,
if Mama got queried at the request of the United States by Russian state security earlier in the week, doesn't that mean that they had an idea who their suspect was earlier in the week?
That's right. Yeah. Well, what irritates me is if they take this young man, if he's killed, the media will be able to spin whatever, you know, story that they want to, which usually means they'll tie him to Al-Qaeda or some ridiculous stuff like that.
Right, but then that also means that Alex Jones will gargle up a box of razor blades and
get behind the microphone and start talking about a false flag operation.
Of course.
And well, this stuff, Juanita, is bad for the cultural and political health of this country, because you know the murder of Lee Harvey Oswald is really what allows what creates the space for us to wonder what the hell really happened in Dealey Plaza in November 1963.
Yes.
And for that matter, the killing of John Wilkes Booth left loose ends dangling that to this day have never been satisfactorily tied off.
Exactly.
If the young man wants to die, I guess he's going to die. But I really, really want to know, as a citizen of the United States, Juanita, I really, really want to know why this happened.
I do too.
And I do too.
And as you just said, when you named John Wilkes Booth, in my lifetime, every major event from Kennedy's death, which I was a child then. You weren't even born.
Well, I was. But I was rather occupied being a baby.
But I've never known anything. If you're a baby boomer, everything pretty much that you've been told in your lifetime is a lie. From the Vietnam War to the Kennedy's death, King's death,
I'll even go so far as to say that I'm not satisfied with the story that came out of the assassination attempt on George Wallace.
Yeah. Well, Nixon had his plumbers to go dump literature in the guy that shot Wallace.
Arthur Bremer.
Went to his apartment and had them to dump McGovern literature in his apartment. That is revealed in the book Abuse of Power. It's transcripts of the Nixon tapes.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah. We really don't know. We really don't know,
I think overall, Juanita, that has been a big part of creating the distrust of government that has been so successfully played upon, by the Alex Joneses and the Ron and Rand Pauls and the whole teabagger movement and the John Birch Society.
Of course. Of course. But also on MSNBC, Bob, Mrs. Greenspan, Andrea Mitchell.
Yes.
She bought out, she dug up Tom Ridge. So I knew which way, then you really know which way it was going. They don't feel the need to dig up these wolf criers of terror when it's one of our own doing the terror. But she brought him on, and I will
right.
imagine.
And see, we're all going to sit here, and we're going to hear nothing but Chechnya, 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 Chechnya. If I am the only person who says it, I want to say it. Of these two young men, the younger of the two was an American citizen. Okay,
yes.
And that means something.
Yes. Well, I went on Press TV's website looking for a different angle, and I could see that the Alex Jones people had already been there.
Oh God!
They had already been there
with all their false flagging.
Saying that it was false flag, false flag thing. The president of Chechnya, if I'm pronouncing it, okay, I'm sorry, I just can't.
No, you're doing fine.
Said that it had nothing to do with their country. Nothing to do with. Now, that's on the Press TV website.
Mm-hmm, right.
And there's a picture of him. And So we don't know. I mean, but our media is so very, very busy trying to make this tie to Muslims. It's just, you know, it's really freakish, you know. And so I thought I'd just call in and just...
Well, I'm glad you did, Juanita, and I hope you have yourself a wonderful weekend.
You too, Bob.
All right, you take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. And that's Juanita calling from Ohio. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, boss, what's happening?
Oh, same old stuff, buddy. Different day.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I'm alive and well, and I'm, you know, very happy for that. And I want to thank people for get well cards and best wishes and prayers and all that good stuff. And, you know, things are going pretty good, so I'm just going to move on here.
About all you can do, isn't it?
That's all I can do.
Try to do a little bit of behavior modification, maybe not have have that extra side of gravy with your gravy. You know.
Oh, listen, man, you would be absolutely amazed at how I've changed my eating habits. I mean, it's just... I've completely changed. You know, I'm a tea drinker now, and I eat oatmeal and...
Not oatmeal.
Oh, yeah, oatmeal and, you know, beans and, you know, all kinds of good stuff, man. And, you know, I don't know. I'm going to see if I can't live for a few more years. So I decided maybe I better switch, and that's what I'm doing. Dr. Bill and I had lunch today. We tried to get a hold of you.
Oh, I saw where he called, but no, yeah. I was, well, over at the Moose?
Yeah.
And you had salad with vinaigrette.
I had salad with vinaigrette and a bowl of pinto beans.
There you go.
Yeah. And Dr. Bill had a taco salad.
Well, we're still getting we're still trying to get the message through, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a little older, a couple of years older than me, so you know, he does all right, I would say.
Well, if we can ever get all the little technical gremlins out of the way, he's doing amazing stuff with his virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution, and just putting out information and ways of thinking. Well, you've known him longer than I have. He just helps you to think about things differently than you otherwise would have.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. He's a very interesting man and very knowledgeable. He's fun to be around.
Oh, yes, he is.
You know, he's fun to be around.
But I tell you what, we've talked a couple of times this week, and his heart is just aching over all this in Boston. Because, you know, that's still home. Dr. Bill's been here how many decades in West Virginia? But Boston is still home.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, it's a terrible thing. And, you know, as far as your last caller couldn't remember what program Iskoff was on, well, he's on all of them.
Nope.
On NBC, or MSNBC. I mean, you know, he just stands in position and they go from one host to the next, and then he's on that show and the next one and the next one. And
might as well change the name of the network to MSNB Iskoff.
Right, right. And then as far as, I don't know, this boat thing, I mean, they showed pictures of it. It doesn't look to be a very big boat, but they're talking about a fire on it and that there was some horrendous gun battle. And, you know, I don't know how all this is happening to the boat that's on fire. And I don't know, it's rather confusing. So...
Well, it is, and I think, you know, I think Sandra's concerns are well taken, too. And mine, I don't know how it is that the police have a right to simply come and demand the right to search your house, because the report that I heard, Wayne, said that they'll knock on your door and announce themselves, and if you don't open the door, then they'll use a bullhorn, and then the reporter said, and after that, I guess they have means of getting through doors.
Well, they do, and I mean, that upsets me, too, and I mean... Early this morning, they were in a gunfight with these two people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, okay, so the one got killed. I mean, they didn't watch where the other guy went?
Well, what? He drove away.
Huh?
He drove away.
Well, they have vehicles.
That's what I thought.
I mean, can't you follow him? Well.
But they were, you know, they were all quite concerned, I guess, about the possibility of more explosives. Yeah, they were saying that they were throwing grenades or throwing homemade bombs out the window along the way. Who knows? Who knows, Wayne? And they've gone and searched the apartment now, where allegedly there is a wife and 3-year-old child, and they say that they found more homemade pipe bombs and stuff inside the apartment. What?
And whose wife is that?
The older of the two.
Okay. I haven't heard that yet. Haven't heard that.
It's,
I don't know.
Well, you know, there seems to be a general agreement, and I'm not trying to be unsympathetic or anything, Wayne, but there's a general agreement that a lot of us are suffering from horror and disaster fatigue, because, like I said earlier, do you remember a week when there were? I mean, can you imagine a time when an assassination attempt on the life of the President of the United States is probably the third, or fourth, or fifth story down in the list of news items?
No.
I mean, that's what that Ricin letter was. That was an assassination attempt.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I know, it's all very confusing, to say the least. And, you know, I mean, I think everybody's tired of this. I want people apprehended and all that stuff, but, I mean, it's 24-hour a day. Well, you know, and then, like you say, then they pass that, the internet thing in the house. Who is that? What's the name of that?
CISPA, CISPA.
Right. And, you know, God,
Well, and I mean, I look at CISPA and, you know, I get a little twitchy in my own right, because there are, depending how that's interpreted, I guess that could be used to just make this go away.
Oh, yes, it could be. Yes, it could be. And, well, it's frightening.
I used to, you know, we try to talk about things here, as you know, that are not the same thing being talked about the same way other places. But I used to just sort of take for granted the fact that that was okay. But now that we live in a country where apparently the police can just tell people they're not allowed to leave their homes, and where you get taken down on the quad of UMass Dartmouth for walking across it, apparently. And you know, the things like CISPA passing the house. I'm wondering if we're engaging just by questioning, not by suggesting any sort of sympathies, but just by questioning authority. I'm wondering if we're engaging in sedition now.
I'm sure they would interpret it that way.
Jesus.
You know, I mean, you know, we found out many, many years ago that, you know, on, regular radio, there are certain things you're not allowed to say or they'll throw you off.
They certainly will.
You remember that, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. You cannot say bite me.
You're right. Well, it all depends on who you're addressing bite me at.
Well, that, and you certainly can't criticize mountaintop removal on terrestrial radio.
You're right. If you're, you know, telling someone to bite me that spends more money advertising than we were, then that's no good.
Right. You know? Suddenly your money becomes worthless.
Exactly. And, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But I thought we came to a safe place where you could express your things. But if this would pass, well, that's questionable.
It absolutely is.
And, you know, the only hope is that it has to go to the Senate. And generally you can't get anything passed there. So, you know, I guess that's the only hope we have. And, I mean, certainly, you know, there are a couple of liberal-leaning senators. Couldn't they just put one of these anonymous holds on it?
Are liberal-leaning senators allowed to do that, or is that just Republicans, Wayne?
Well, certainly Republicans are the only ones that seem to exercise that, but it would seem to me that, you know, you're one of the magic hundred. You ought to be able to do it, too. And you don't have to tell anybody.
Right, because what fun is a secret hold if you have to tell people the secret?
Well, exactly. Isn't that the most ridiculous thing you ever heard of?
Well, you know, I had a buddy down in southern West Virginia who'd say, that just beats cat's effing.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. But anyway, buddy, I wanted to call in and thank everybody and let everybody know that I'm just fine.
I'm glad you did, and lots of well wishes in the chat room and via email for your continued recovery and good health.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's going to happen. You know, I got a lot of things left to do here, and I'm going to do them too. So
sounds good, and I'm glad you called in tonight because back to D.C. next week.
Yeah, I know. You're going to be there all week?
Yeah.
You're going to be able to broadcast any from there?
Well, it was supposed to have been quite easy last time, and then, you know, four computers died in 3 days.
Yeah, I understand.
But that's the plan. And, the other boss, Agnes, will be back here fielding calls on the phone lines and feeding them to me down the line to our broadcast location in D.C.
Well, I hope it goes well.
Well, we're making progress. It's really, you know, I feel like it's important work. It's frustrating work with the Congress being the way that it is. But the background check vote sort of throws everything into question. But if we can't agree that little children ought not be poisoned, then, you know, that's just another one of those moments in this country, Wayne, where I kind of look up and go, you know, we may be done. I mean,
somebody, I guess it was Sandra mentioned Erin Burnett the other day.
Yeah.
In her conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, do you remember the flap over the lead in the toys from China?
Right.
Erin Burnett was defending that. She said, well, you better, you know, we have to watch what we do here. You know, we don't want to raise prices.
Right.
In other words, you know, I mean, it's going to cost too much not to poison children, so we can't do that. I mean, that was basically her argument. I mean, and who's she married to?
I can't remember his name, but he's a
hedge fund manager or some shit.
With Citigroup or something.
Right, you know.
Yeah, no conflict of interest there.
Right.
And as Sandra noted,
is Mrs. Greenspan.
Yeah,
you know?
Don't you love referring to her as Mrs. Greenspan?
Well, yeah, and you know, and a lot of people don't know Mrs. McConnell used to be the Secretary of Labor too.
Yeah, the for a period of time where the Department of Labor was the most ineffective it has ever been.
Yes, and that's under that. Administration came the correcting overtime rules.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted to clarify them, which means, you know, what they wanted to do was eliminate overtime or time and a half for overtime.
Right.
And, you know.
Well, and what they did to the nurses?
Well,
remember that decision that said if you've ever asked somebody to empty a bedpan, that makes you supervisory and you can't
supervisor.
Be a member of a union?
Yes, that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they did. And, if you want to clarify the overtime rules, I could do that in one sentence. If you work over 40 hours a week, you get paid time and a half, period. Clarified.
Yeah, no everybody clear on that now?
These people are ridiculous. And, you know, that's what... Well, that's what we were doing the day, that Tuesday we were in Bluefield and Lewisburg demonstrating with nurses at those two hospitals who voted in the union last August. In Bluefield, they voted in 63%, and in Lewisburg, it was, you know, 58 or 59. That was in August. The two hospitals are owned by the same corporation, and they have refused to sit down and talk to these nurses yet.
Because there is no legal pressure, there's no means of applying legal pressure to them to make them do it.
No, I mean, it's like the NLRB doesn't exist. And, you know, because, you know, this judge that ruled that Obama's recess appointments were unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Do you know who that guy is?
Who?
That's the same guy that, I believe he was appointed by Reagan, I think. Or no, Nixon, I guess. This is the guy that overturned Poindexter and North's conviction. North's conviction.
Oh, is that Sentel?
Yeah, yeah. So it tells you where this guy is.
Oh, he's awful.
Oh, yes, he is.
And he's in large part the reason that the DC bench is the nightmare that it is.
Well, I mean, you know, these people, well, they can be impeached, you know, but. Well, that's the only way you could get rid of them.
Right. And good luck getting that done with this house.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. But anyway, I'm sure there's other people waiting to talk, man. So.
All right. Well, awful good to hear from you. And make it more often, would you, if you're just, you know, sitting around in your boredom?
Okay. Well, I'm, you know, I can't. I had great arguments with doctors yesterday, and I won, you know.
Hell, you won.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Did I tell you the first, you know?
Yeah, you told me about the first one.
That said, tell me 2 months. Well, I went and saw my regular doctor, and I told her, you know, the situation. I said, look at my labs. Everything's great. You know, I feel good. I think that, you know, part of my rehab and getting better is me being able to go back to the office and, you know.
Yeah, because if you sit around the house for 2 months, you're going to go stir crazy.
I'll go crazy. And I said, you know, here's the skinny. Like, I've been driving and I've been going to my office since 2 days after I got out of the hospital. Now, I don't stay there all day. I come home. I do my exercises. If I don't feel like going back, I don't. And I said, you know, regardless of what you guys say, I'm going to continue to do that anyway. I mean, you should be smart enough to figure that out. It would be really nice, you know, if I had your blessing so that, you know, I could justify getting a paycheck. And she said, okay, I'll be back in a few minutes. Well, I know she's going to go talk to the other doctor, the other doctor. And I'm thinking, oh, well, this isn't going to go well at all, you know. And then she came back and said, how about Monday? And I said, Monday would be fine. So I got, you know, I'm sanctioned by the doctors that I can return to work. And that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, I mean, I got all kind of people on my ass about it and, you know, you need to do something else, find a hobby, blah, 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 blah. You know, I work. That's what I do. That's what I love to do, and that's what I'm going to continue to do. You know, I'm not taking up painting or, you know, needlepoint. I'm going to continue to
do that. Somebody needs to take up painting just to compete with George Bush. I mean, couldn't you at least do us one little self-portrait of you looking in the mirror in the shower or whatever? I mean,
no, I couldn't.
Okay, just checking.
To be honest with you, I could not. I'd rather continue harassing the people that screw over working people all the time.
Hear, hear.
That's what I like to do.
And there's no small amount of that still going on in this
state. Oh, no, there's lots of targets, believe me.
It's a target-rich environment.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, anyway.
Well, best of luck to you. And I know everybody's tickled to hear how good you sound.
Okay, man, and, you know, Well, I'll be talking to you. Indeed, you're going to be gone all week.
Yeah, I'll probably be back either Saturday or Sunday.
All right.
And I've been telling people that you really like it when you open the mailbox there at 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMV 318, and it's not and the only thing that's in it is an echo. That you really like it when it's not like that.
Oh, I do. I mean, you know, well, everybody got to understand. You know, one of the reasons we have all this breakdown is we're dealing with equipment that's 8 years old, 6 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it's a little newer than the original stuff, but not much of it.
No.
And the only way we could get more is if we get more donations.
Hear, hear.
It's just that simple.
It really is.
And, well, I'd love to see people donate more.
All right.
So,
all right.
All right, brother.
Thanks, Wayne. Have a good night.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that, of course, is the inimitable Boss Man Wayne. The man who was instrumental, the reason all of this began in the first place. Jack in Shreveport asking, Prism Saturday, right? Prism, Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Marty, by the way, writing in, noting, Mr. Aaron Burnett is David Rubalata, Managing Director for Citigroup. No conflicts of interest there. Shucks, no. And I hope he's still with us. We've got the Angry Indian on the Skype line. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I don't know. I'm brown. It's not too safe right now. You dig?
Yeah, it'd be move carefully.
You know, it's not too cool out here. There's been through the grapevine, there's been a series of attacks supposedly of people. I've heard of one Bangladeshi so far and.
Pakistani,
yeah. I believe they're both in the hospital. Nothing really critical, but they, you know, they were thumped pretty bad. Yeah, it's you know, I mean, the freak out behind all of this should say a lot about how the media is handling news. The mainstream media, anyway, is handling news. I mean, they even got the Texas story screwed up, which the conspiracy theorists. You know, the Alex Jones types and what have you, they're going to take that as it was done purposely. It turns out it was this Justice of the Peace and his wife who did in these officials.
Yeah.
And because of the way it was reported, well, this gives the far right, they can now say, well, hey, look, they said it was a white supremacist group. Well, hey, it wasn't. It turns out it was one of them. So the press never gets it right. You really need to be listening to Alex Jones. That's one thing that bothers me. You know, the racial profiling bit, you know, bothers me. Again, this is the mainstream press. They're reporting things. They're not confirming anything. They had somebody in custody. They didn't have somebody in custody. They're naming countries. Countries when there's no confirmation of any larger plot or what have you. I mean, I'm reading the same mainstream news that you're reading. I have no inside information on anything. And this is supposed to be the mainstream news. And when you say MSNBC, when you say CNN, what have you, Fox News, some people are going to believe Fox News no matter, you know, how many times they've been proven wrong, no matter how many times they've been shown to falsify evidence. But, you know, the way all of this is being handled from the top down is leading to, you know, way more panic. You know, people are being assaulted. We saw this happen during the Donna thing. I mean, what happened when the police were so nervous about that particular crime?
And yet, I just got a note in from Jack in Shreveport, angry, that says that the second young man has been taken alive.
He's been taken alive. Okay, yeah, I'm looking at Al Jazeera right now. Yeah, let's hear his story. I want to hear what the hell is going on. I mean, we have one uncle saying one thing, another uncle saying something else, the mother saying, something else. One uncle, it seems, who doesn't speak English, that's the one that they want to talk to, you know, doesn't speak English very well. You know, this is being framed in the way that it's being reported. Now, as far as, like I said, the conspiracy things, I have no clue. I'm reading what you're reading. There seems to be contradictions again. I blame the mainstream press.
Well, and
it seems like
within,
you know,
within the parameters, Angry, of blaming the mainstream press, or what we call the for-profit media, blame, and because there, we have not always been in a state of total journalistic failure that we are in now.
No.
Blame the 24-hour news cycle. It has its benefits. I mean, a good news gathering organization can marshal resources and give you information, because there is an immediacy and a certain there's a certain quality to live that isn't there in subsequent stuff. But first facts often are failed facts because they're not facts. And it is that urgency to get out there and say something, broadcast something, get something moving, that creates a lot of what I think creates a lot of what you're complaining about, and rightfully so.
Well, one of the things I want to mention about this is what's the background behind it. Now, you and I mean, we're news junkies. If we sat around and had a 24/7 feed, it would be no particular problem. I mean, I know I try to check what I put out there. I try to, and when I make mistakes, I try to rectify it. But, you know, what is the background behind this? You have a culture that is being driven with war psychology. You know, Noam Chomsky, Professor Noam Chomsky has talked about this. Michael Parenti has talked about this. Edward Herman has talked about this. You know, I mean, the journalists are only doing what they're paid to do. They wouldn't be where they are if they weren't believers in the system. And who owns the system? You know, Dr. Chomsky has said, ownership determines content. So, you know, they're going to put out whatever their ownership really tells them to put out with the meme that's already prevalent. And the meme that's prevalent, and Dr. John has been talking about this since he's been on your network, he's been talking about the prevalence of war psychology. The idea that, well, you can have slavery and have freedom at the same time. I mean, the Greeks thought that that was possible.
Yeah.
The British thought that was possible. Well, when General Chinese Gordon went to clear out Arab slavery in the Sudan, what were the British bringing in their term? Okay, so they would pay them, but they paid them virtually nothing and do pretty much what has been done in Rhodesia, South Africa, and what have you.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's a framing, but there's a background behind this. And this really shocking, because you have what happened in Texas, in Waco, Texas, this week. You have this happen in Boston this week. And you have this Elvis impersonator, this evil Elvis impersonator, who will never be profiled for being an Elvis impersonator, for being a white male, right? He will never be profiled for this. He does what he does. And as you mentioned earlier with someone, this is a page 4, page 8 story.
Yeah. And
you know, this is the only press in the world that I think would do that. But again, it's the war psychology. It either says two things. Either they don't give a damn about the head of state, or it says that we're so used to this that this is the new normal. And either way you look at it, it's scary.
It's past that. It's terrifying. And before we run out of time, Angry, I want to give you a chance to tell folks a little bit about what you do with Fourth World Radio, and just, you know, let folks know where they can go to hear it.
Oh, well, I mean, there's not too much to know. We're just trying to do the same thing Bob and a lot of other people are doing. We're trying to make sure that our own people, indigenous people, are, you know, not so much represented, because I don't feel that that's my job. There's just too many groups and too many differences in terms of language and culture and geography and even national issues. But in a global sense, in terms of the fourth world, we try to operate as a, you know, as a news blotter, so indigenous people can realize, or at least have access to what we, what we believe anyway affects us, like say the XL pipeline. A lot of folks would not look at that as an indigenous issue, but it is.
Sure it
is. It's also the people in Appalachia. You know, I mean, this affects a lot of different people, but much of this pipeline is going to come through native territory. Which, you know, we can get into an argument or a discussion about the treaties, but whether the treaties are there or not, these are communities, people live here, and this is technically our land. Canada, Mexico, they're facing the same problems. We have a unity.
And I don't know, it kind of flew under the radar, I guess, and shame on me not for mentioning it until now, But in the last week or so, there has been a massive treaty signed by indigenous peoples swearing mutual common defense in the in the face of all this predation.
Yeah, and see, and the thing about that is, you know, you already have a situation in Canada where the government there looks at all First Nations people as potential terrorists. You know, which is a really, you know, when we talk about a frightening situation, they're technically, you know, looking at every Native person in the any province of Canada throughout their jurisdiction to be a potential enemy of the state. You know, whether they are activists or not. And
right.
So when, you know, when something like this happens, we can say, well, this is just a piece of paper, but it's what the piece of paper symbolizes. Is, you know, the same thing when a few leaders from Canada went to Iran. They went to Iran for conferences. They were on the news. That was a problem to a lot of people in North America, not just in Canada. So,
right.
You know, we're dealing with a lot.
Tell people how to find you.
All right, well, the easiest way to find us is at ang-newswire.blogspot.com. You can also check us out on Tumblr at aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com. And we're on WordPress as well. We're at aboriginalpress.wordpress.com.
Well, I sure did enjoy the long form conversation that we had. And I hope folks got a lot out of it, and you're doing magnificent work.
Well, I'm trying, but you know, I like supporting people like you, because you know, it, a lot of folks who have, like, I don't understand, you know, that guy from Appalachia, how is it that you talk him up and you guys have had shows? I said, you're not listening to what we're talking about. You know, you're really not listening to it. You're not getting, you know, the gist of what it is. You know, we're activists, and you know, where you're seeing a line. You know, of course, there's a line. We've never met. If I saw Bob, yeah. We have these physical differences, and it seems to be that's what you're stuck on. And there are historical differences, but he makes an effort to understand who I am, and I try my best to understand what's going on in Appalachia and what's happening to the Scots Irish in this country, because there is a history here. And, you know, people just look at me. Because, you know, the idea of that sort of open conversation, we talk a lot about it. You know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of words, there's a lot of sing-song, and as Sandra said earlier, you have LL Cool J that will go and, you know, do what he did.
Yeah, doesn't that just make you want to stick your head in a bucket of lye?
Huh?
Doesn't that just make you want to stick your head in a bucket of lye?
Well, I'm used to it. You know, I mean, they're out there. You know, Eric Rush, you know, did what this week? You mentioned, what's his name that just ran for president not too long ago, knowing he wasn't going to win, the 999 man, the Pizza Hut.
Yeah, fella. Yeah, Herb.
You know, Michael Steele, you know, I mean, you know, these are all human lawn jockeys, and there's really nothing you can do about this, and they exist. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, Appalachia has people who will go and sign away land and not think at all about the people. Indian country, we have our hang around the four types. You know, I mean, this is just, you know, again, it's capitalism. War psychology, capitalism. You can't have one without the other. So it's going to inform how journalism is being used, because this just keeps pushing the meme. Be afraid. You know, you can't have people who will sit for this. You know, but I'll tell you one thing that really gets me. You know, it's pretty disgusting how these conservative freaks out here have been just totally disrespecting the families from Sandy Hook.
Oh.
And, you know, for people who are upset about that, you know, think about this. Why are you surprised that they would upset or have no respect for Gabby Giffords or the people of Sandy Hook? I mean, there's a black man killed in the United States by someone in uniform or vigilante, a white vigilante generally. Every 28 hours in the United States, there's a report, Malcolm X Grassroots Movement report. You can find the links to it at ang-newswire. You'll get to the sites. I'm stumbling and trying to hurry.
Well,
but,
yeah, hey, Angry, I got to get out of here because we're right up against it. But I hope let's continue this conversation in a longer form sometime very soon. Can we do that, please?
All right, and take it easy in Washington, buddy.
I'm going to try. You take it easy.
All right.
Bye now. The Angry Indian. And I hope we will talk a little bit more, a lot more, soon. What an amazing evening. Thank you, everyone. We almost made it completely to the fundraising goal. Hopefully that'll happen in a couple of minutes. Thank you very much to Robert for putting that challenge on the table. And And thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. It really is time to get out of here. Thank you very, very much. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn. Have a great weekend, y'all.